was the official language of Oceania and had been devised to meet the ideological needs of INGSOC, or English Socialism. In the year 1984, there was not as yet anyone who used Newspeak as his sole means of communication, either in speech or writing. The leading articles in the Times were written in it, but this was a tour de force which could only be carried out by a specialist. It was expected that Newspeak would have finally superseded Oldspeak, or Standard English, as we should call it, by about the year 2050. Meanwhile, it gained ground steadily, all party members tending to use Newspeak words and grammatical constructions more and more in their everyday speech. The version in use in 1984 and embodied in the 9th and 10th editions of the Newspeak Dictionary was a provisional one and contained many superfluous words and archaic formations which were due to be suppressed later. It is with the final, perfected version, as embodied in the 11th edition of the dictionary, that we are concerned here. The purpose of Newspeak was not only to provide a medium of expression for the world view and mental habits proper to the devotees of INGSOC, but to make all other modes of thought impossible. It was intended that when Newspeak had been adopted once and for all, and Oldspeak forgotten, a heretical thought, that is, a thought diverging from the principles of INGSOC, should be literally unthinkable, at least so far as thought is dependent on words. Its vocabulary was so constructed as to give exact and often very subtle expression to every meaning that a party member could properly wish to express, while excluding all other meanings and also the possibility of arriving at them by indirect methods. This was done partly by the invention of new words, but chiefly by eliminating undesirable words and by stripping such words as remained of unorthodox meanings and, so far as possible, of all secondary meanings, whatever. To give a single example, the word free still existed in Newspeak, but it could only be used in such statements as, this dog is free from lice, or this field is free from weeds. It could not be used in its old sense of politically free or intellectually free, since political and intellectual freedom no longer existed even as concepts, and were therefore...
I wish President Obama would lead and take advantage of the opportunities presented by a divided government.
How are the
Honestly,
first...
Bob, I don't expect...
What are the first...
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
I'm what the leaders of the Tea Party would call a rhino, Republican in name only. And that's ironic, because that's exactly what I think about the leaders of the Tea Party, because the most conservative Republicans today aren't Republicans. Republicans believe in a prohibitive military. We believe in a common sense government, and that there are social programs enacted in the last half century that work, but there are way too many costing way too much that don't. And we believe in the rule of law and order and free market capitalism. The Tea Party believes in loving America, but hating Americans. Tea Party Congressman Alan West of Florida. I must confess, when I see anyone with an Obama bumper sticker, I recognize them as a threat to the gene pool. They believe in loving America, but hating its government. Conservative activist Grover Norquist.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
And they believe that anyone who disagrees with the Tea Party has sinister anti-American motives.
The objective of the liberals is to destroy this country. The objective of the liberals is to make America mediocre.
Most of all, you must never, under any circumstance, seek to reach a compromise with your opponent or do any of what Democrats and genuine Republicans...
The perversion of our great
history is that sensible, smart, strong Republicans, the very men and women who should be standing up to radical fundamentalism, are so frightened of losing primary battles to religious zealots that they've thrown in the towel on sanity.
Compromise is weakness. A fundamentalist belief in scriptural literalism.
Denying science, unmoved by facts, undeterred by new information, a hostile fear of progress, a demonization of education,
a need to control women's bodies, severe xenophobia, tribal mentality, intolerance of dissent, and a pathological hatred of the U.S. government.
They can call themselves the Tea Party, they can call themselves conservatives, and they can even call themselves Republicans, though Republicans certainly shouldn't. But we should call them what they
are. Rhinos is an insult. It means, as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party, but to their...
Hold me under, hold me under, hold me under my breath.
EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, is a transient disturbance that knocks out all electronics within its blast radius, much like extremists, moderates, and progressives do to logic, reason, and liberty. You're probably wondering, but Rex, Liberty's Thunder is about conservatism, so it must be extremist, right? Well, it's true that this show is about conservatism, properly understood, but what's wrong with being an extreme conservative? That's not the problem. The problem is the word extreme, used as a noun, or even an adjective without an object. If one is labeled an extremist, that begs the question, an extreme what? But the Orwellian newspeak of political correctness, party talking points, and corporate media punditry permits no quarter for rational thought. Are authentic American conservatives extremists? Can the GOP only win elections with moderates? Is the progressive agenda really destroying the republic? The problem in trying to answer these questions is we often don't know the meaning of the terms. They are levied against us derogatively, and we tend to end up using them ourselves. This tactic cedes the high ground to the enemy and permits the tyrants, their fellow travelers, and the useful idiots to frame the debate, assuring a loss of the argument before it even begins. If we are to restore constitutionally limited government and personal freedom, real conservatives have to win elections. To win elections, we must first win the argument. We can't win the argument if we allow the proponents of tyranny to redefine the terms and control the narrative. Speaker Newt Gingrich said, "You don't run our guy against their guy. You run our vision of the world against theirs." But what if the Republican vision isn't conservative? Ron Paul said, "Before you can have a political revolution, you must have an intellectual revolution." But how can you have an intellectual revolution if your enemy controls the language and the terms of the debate? It's time for conservatives to take back the true meaning of these words. We're going to take the fight to the enemy on our terms. Being a conservative means being a principled realist, not a utopian ideologue. These words and the ideas they embody have an objective meaning grounded in truth. Don't let the enemy take you for a ride, grab the wheel, and steer the argument. You, as a grassroots conservative activist, in order to be effective, must know the real meaning of these words, the principles and ideas for which they stand, and how to articulate them. Defend them and affect real change, turning the tide back from the road to serfdom towards true liberty. Who uses words like extremist, hard right, teabaggers against conservatives? Democrats and leftists, obviously, but also rhinos, which are Republicans in name only, political opportunists, faux conservatives, and absolute anti-statists like anarchists and libertines. Traitors who profess to be conservatives are the worst of all, and they are the first ones you have to defeat. Remember back in 1960 or 1964, Barry Goldwater was labeled an extremist, and he replied, "Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue." And before that, in fact, before the founding of the Republic, Thomas Paine said, "Moderation in temper is always a virtue, but moderation in principle is a species of vice." If you want your constitutional republic back, get busy replacing the fake conservatives that are using the word extremist, teabagger, and all this other crap against real conservatives and propping up criminal government and its corporate cronies. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives who were right to demand the repeal or at least the delay of this Obamacare debacle. They were labeled extremists, but they weren't extremists. They were right. They were the ones who were in the middle of where the republic is. The extremists are those who want to push a Marxist agenda or who want to pretend to be conservatives while propping up this corporatist agenda. It's time to drop a real EMP on the perversion of terms, the twisting of the principles of ordered liberty, which are found in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution for these United States, and drop an EMP on the dastardly deeds, both real and perceived, being done in your name. To defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, their fellow travelers, especially the Democrats, first you must crush the rhinos. Do it now. Do it for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your extremist host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City.
And I'm your extremist co-host, Caveman, Trog, from the West Coast and Alaska. You know something? I was, I feel like I'm in deja vu. Have we been here before? Sorry, I'd be sarcastic. But listening to that opening again, you know, the recording that you put together where you spliced everything and reading, you know, your description, your short mini novel, that is awesome, by the way. I'm being sarcastic. There's something important to understand, and I said this back, way back, when we were on a show, when we were still getting to know each other, so to speak. And I said, you know, the problem is we need new words. And the reason I said that was because every time I turned around, conservatives and Christians and Tea Party and libertarians were demonized. And I understood the core values of what those people stood for, so I just couldn't understand it. But obviously it's a marketing technique. And, you know, you would think that after Romney lost and lost his seats, because you, when you're top of the ticket, loses or is a poor candidate. I had to be careful what I was going to say there, but a poor candidate, it costs you down ballot seats too. So, you know, we didn't just lose the presidency. We lost, you know, seats in the House and the Senate and wherever else. And this is important to understand because, one, do we have the power to change the marketing structure? No, because we're just a couple brown coats, you know, on a radio show. And the terminology is embedded into our culture, whether it's conservative or, you know, you talk about Reagan, everybody gets a flash in their mind that this is what that stands for. And they, and the left and the rhinos, the progressive Democrats who have infiltrated the Republican Party. Let's get the words right on this, okay? They have infiltrated the party, but they use those words against us by creating a new language around what that word means. So if you're going to win, you have to win the war on words, because that's what's one of the biggest criticisms in this country is the power of talk radio. And especially the power of conservative talk radio. It's demonized all the time. Rush Limbaugh, who basically carved out the first huge empire of talk radio, now you've got, you know, a multitudes of people, whether it's Beck or Levin or, you know, the rest of them. I don't want to start throwing names out there, but, you know, these people reach tens of millions of people a day. And they are effective because they're speaking the truth. And if you're not plugged into those people, whether it's, you know, whoever your favorite person is, I don't want to get into, you know, promoting a particular person, but if you're not plugged in, then what you're hearing on the media and the news from the left or from the rhinos is negative connotations about those people continually. But if you're plugged into them, you know what they're saying is a lie. So we are in a war of words. And if we don't get if we don't win this war of words, then it's going to be a different kind of war in a few years, because these people want control of this country. They want total control of this country. If anybody's freaking out about, I mean, just pick your conspiracy, whether it's Obamacare or it's FEMA camps or the Second Amendment battle, or, oh my God, now Obama's cutting off the lead factory so we won't have ammunition. I mean, they're, you know, people are freaked out. And if you don't understand that they're dead serious about winning, then you're missing the boat. And if you're arguing about, like, that conversation that you had today, if you're arguing about gay marriage when our country is falling apart and they're printing $85 billion a month and they're monetizing the debt around the world, and we've printed and we have over $17 trillion in debt, and the Republicans just caved again on the debt ceiling mm-hmm. and the budget and the sequester, just caved again, folks. If you don't understand those battles, all these other battles, these little social arguments that people have and pot and all this crap, that ain't going to mean nothing. You're focused on the wrong things, because our republic, well, our republic's been gone for a long time, but our democracy is at risk now. I guess people just don't study history, Rex. I, you know, you and I, we must be old or something, but we're very into history. We're very
don't
into
remind
understanding.
Me.
Yeah, we're very into understanding, you know, social impact, you know, what I call behavioral science, which is cause and effect, you know, because, you know, I grew up, my mother was a sociology history major, so I grew up with this stuff. How to put together the pieces and understand why we're where we're at today. And understanding in the past what worked and what didn't work and why it worked or didn't work. And you can get it, take that argument down every road you want, whether it's moral issues or, you know, prayer in school or, you know, whatever the case may be. But you can break things down logically and look at history and understand why we're where we're at today. And mm-hmm. if you don't wake up and educate yourself, then you are not going to – if you don't like where we're at today, this ain't even the beginning of the plan. mm-hmm. Fundamental change is a whole different thing than you think it is, and it isn't about – your local conspiracy theory, it is an actual plan, and they've been at it for 100 years fine-tuning it, and America is just now weak enough morally, spiritually, financially, and also just the mood and lack of appreciation for the country is in a perfect mm-hmm. place to fundamentally change it. And that's what we talk about all the time, you know, to different degrees. I kind of got on a roll there. Did I mess this up?
No, that was perfect. Yeah, I mean, that's the overarching theme. And the idea is that they use words and twist their meaning in order to pervert the conversation so that you don't know where you stand anymore. You know, the extremist, hostage-taking, teabagger, hard right wing of the Republican Party has infiltrated the party, and where are the cool-headed, moderate Republicans who work bipartisan deals with Democrats? Well, one of those cool-headed moderate Republicans, who's allegedly a conservative and was the number two man on Karl Rove's monstrous 2012 ticket, is Congressman Paul Ryan. Well, he just came out, you know, singing Kumbaya with, I forgot her name already, but the chick from the Senate. They've been in hard negotiations over the
Patty
budget
Murray,
deal.
The ex-kindergarten
teacher. Yeah, Patty Murray.
Ex-kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, well, you know, Congress is a lot like kindergarten. they just came out holding hands and talking about how they've managed to compromise. There are some things I wouldn't do. There's some things he wouldn't do. But we found the areas where we would agree. We have a bipartisan agreement to bust the spending caps, which means violate the sequester that was put in 2011. And, you know, basically all they agreed to, and of course they haven't had the vote yet, so that's important because the House leaves for break this coming Friday, and they're going to want to try to get the grand deal done and to avoid a shutdown, because that was so controversial. The Ted Cruz extremist right-wing Tea Party shutdown was horrible for the Republicans, and we can't let that happen again. It's too controversial. So we've decided that, you know, I found out what I want to spend money on, and he found out what he wants to spend money on, so we're just going to spend money. So the Republicans get their military-industrial complex welfare spending for the corporations, and the Democrats get to buy votes by extending unemployment benefits and Medicaid and Obamacare and all that other crap. And basically, we all get screwed because there isn't enough money to do all these stupid things, whether they should or shouldn't be done in the first place. Besides the point, we can't afford it. But they use the word extremist because the Republicans want to box in the real conservatives, because we actually want the government to be back, bound by the Constitution, and we want the elected representatives to actually represent people. Now, everybody says that that's what they want. That's why they go vote. And then what happens? Oh, I don't know. In 2012, this young guy from Texas runs on a defunding, repealing Obamacare platform. The people of Texas elect him. He goes into the Senate and actually does that. Now, whether you agree with him or not, obviously if you're a conservative and you're listening to this show, you agree with him. If you're a liberal, then obviously you don't. But the fact is, he told people what he was going to do. He went to the Senate and he did it. And so now he's labeled a bully, Tea Party extremist psycho. And that's the junior senator from Texas, Ted Cruz. Well, is Ted Cruz an extremist? Because is Obamacare, is the delay of Obamacare, which was the compromise that the conservative Republicans were willing to give to Harry Reid, is that really a bad idea? Well, since then, we've seen what a bad idea not delaying it has been. Sure, maybe we got 500,000 people who weren't insured before insured, but we have 5 million people who lost their insurance. So who knows how good an idea it is. You know, that's the insanity. But Ted Cruz is the extremist because he wanted to delay it. And by the way, Obama himself has delayed portions of the law illegally because apparently Obama doesn't seem to think that the Constitution matters.
Isn't it over 40 different delays of some form or another?
Very possible. I can't keep up with it. But the simple fact is that we aren't the extremists that they label us to be. We are conservatives, and most people who identify as conservative have no idea what that means. We've lost touch with it. We've allowed the new language to corrupt and pervert it. People equate conservatism with republicanism, which are absolutely not the same. I could give two craps about the Republican Party. I can't stand most Republicans, and I don't care about the party, neither does Strog. But that's the party, which is the one of the wings of the duopoly at the national level, that actually has some conservatives in it. And the idea is you got to increase those numbers at a grassroots level without being afraid of the extremist label that they keep levying against you and stand up for what matters and get more people involved. And is it controversial? Sure. As Ron Paul says, truth is treason in the empire of lies. And that's what we're facing. So you're the extremist. You're the legislative arsonist. You're the teabagger. You're the crazy hard right-wing nut jobs who are afraid of foreigners and gays and women and all that stuff, because those are the only emotional labels that they have to levy against you, because when it comes down to it, we are the only ones who are standing up for the Constitution. Now, when I say we conservatives, a real conservative is two-thirds a libertarian. When it comes to economics and political power diffusion, we're in the same place as the libertarians. We have some differences, especially vis-a-vis the ordering of society. But you want to know something? Right now, things have gone so far to the left that if we don't band together and stop it, we're going to lose the whole thing. So you have to remember two things. One, what is this about? It's about the power diffusion. All the way on the left, you have absolute government, which is total power, and it doesn't matter if it's a democracy, a dictatorship.
And $600 million websites that don't work.
Yeah, exactly. That's all the way on the far left.
Sorry.
But it doesn't matter, Chris, if it's an oligarchy, a monarchy, a democracy, a dictatorship. It doesn't matter. It's absolute government. Yeah, and all the way on the far right, you got no government, which is generally chaos, the war of all against war, and it's usually just a way station on the way back to tyranny. Our republic was founded... Yeah, slightly to the – exactly. It's Thunderdome, Liberty's Thunderdome. But the republic was founded slightly to the left of the extreme right, which is anarchy, where there is a minimum amount of government to keep things ordered between us, okay, without tilting to anarchy. We are so far to the left of that that if you want anything close to that, even if you're not quite that far right, if you just simply want a little bit less government, you're an extremist, and that's the problem.
Well, look at Kennedy. You know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That was a Democrat. Okay, now it's what are you going to give me? Okay, and when you think about these things, you this is that point, that historical relevance. That's the word I'm looking for, whatever. But when you look at these things, you have to look at what has changed, what it was like and what has changed. Kennedy was more conservative than most of these rhinos who are beating up on Cruz and Rand and Amash and Gowdy and the rest of them. Kennedy was more conservative and more fiscally conservative and more concerned about, you know, he had national defense issues because we were still in the Cold War and things like that. But, you know, I could vote for the guy today, you know, in comparison to what the hell the Republicans put in up there, McCain and Romney. Are you kidding me? You know, and I think one of the other confusions for people is understanding the difference between a liberal Marxist communist ideology where government controls everything and a corporatist fascist ideology where corporations and government controls everything. Because when you look at Obamacare as an example, Obamacare is not socialized medicine. Obamacare is government-controlled, government-mandated corporation. You have to give money to corporations. They want this as bad as the leftists want it. It is a mess because it's the thing that destroys an economy. It's not free market. When people look at healthcare, the left likes to beat up on the free market. Well, we haven't had free market healthcare for a long time. Dr. Ron Paul talks about this, about, you know, back when he was young
before World War II.
Practice. Yeah, and how they dealt with people who couldn't afford to pay and how they, you know, all that stuff. You know, government forcing regulations and Medicaid really screwed up healthcare because they pay pennies on the dollar. You know, and before Obamacare was ever launched, many, 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 many doctors were already refusing Medicaid patients and not either by not taking more patients, you know, and then gradually phasing out of it because they couldn't afford it. Between all the lawsuits and all the regulations and all the extra expenses to be a medical doctor and those types of things, and then getting 30 cents on the dollar for your care, you know, for people on Medicaid, they couldn't afford it. You know, there was a time when there was a kind of a balance, but when you have a larger and larger and larger percentage of people on socialized, because that's socialized medicine, but they're forcing the free enterprise market to deliver it because the doctors don't work for Medicaid. And that dynamics is why we're where we're at today. And that is not the free market. When you want to talk about, when the left likes to beat up on the free market, that is not the free market. That's a perversion of government screwing it up instead of letting free market principles deal with it. And so that's what we're dealing with today. And this Obamacare, you know, all these people signing up, most of these people are the poor, the Medicaid, the Medicare, et cetera, most of these numbers. They don't talk about it. The dang Republicans won't talk about it. I don't understand why not. It's a perfect point. You know, it's a great argument for this thing. We haven't even touched the normal person. Well, we've got 5-6 million people been thrown off their damn health care.
That's because the Republicans aren't against Romneycare. I mean, Obamacare. They're for it.
Yeah.
The only thing
because
they want to run
corporations.
Yeah, they want to run against it and run against Obama in 2014, but every time they had a real opportunity to do something about this, they attacked the Republicans who actually wanted to do something about it so they could hold 42 fake votes to say, I voted 42 times to defund it. Yeah, except that the two times when it actually mattered, you voted for it, you sissy, you rhino, you swish. It's Boehner care. It's McConnell care. It's rhino care. Hang this friggin' thing around the rhinos' necks and oust them. In 2014, you've got every single House member up for election. Vote the conservatives in, boot the rhinos out, and a third of the Senate. So people like Lindsay Leitner's Loafers Graham and Bob Loss's Cork Corker, boot those guys out. It's got to be done because if you don't do it now, you can, you know, engage in all sorts of mental masturbation about 2016. If you don't win 2014, 2016 is going to be impossible. And that's why you have to fight now. Let's do a little housekeeping. Why are we broadcasting at 8 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday? Well, because apparently Blog Talk Radio dropped an EMP on us on Sunday, and the show ended early. So we want to get to all the stuff we want to talk about. Remember, our regular broadcast time, Liberty's Thunder, is 10 p.m. Eastern, Sunday nights. You can find our show on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, type in Liberty's Thunder, go to our page. Every show we've done, the old ones, Tex and Rex show, and all the new Liberty's Thunder shows are right there for you to play. in your browser or your mobile device anytime. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, there's a download link. Just right-click on that. You get an MP3. You can email that to people. You can burn a CD, give it to people, whatever. Remember that you are the only means by which anybody even knows that this show is on the air. And our job is to try to bring you authentic conservatism from a grassroots perspective to figure out where we stand, what we're trying to do, and actually affect the change at the ground game so that the Republican Party at the national level is actually conservative and we can stem the tide of corporatism, socialism, Marxism, Islamism, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's stuff that has nothing to do with America or the Constitution. It's all foreign. So make sure you do that. And if you're on Facebook, go to our page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Like the page in your news feed. You'll get notifications of when we are broadcasting and other action items you can take, like when to call about audit the Fed and stuff like that. You can join Liberty's Thunder. That link is on our page. And also go to Coalition of Freedom on Facebook if you want more in-depth discussion about this stuff. Because if you don't do this now, and you don't get other people involved now, we might lose this whole thing. That's how important it is. All right? So you really, really got to understand this stuff. Now, the whole idea here is to talk about moderates and extremists and all this stuff. Well, moderates. What's a moderate? A moderate is a Republican who is willing to compromise on all their principles in order to win office, to be popular with the media and the Democrats, and to grow government. That's what a moderate is. And the fact is that these moderates are running a Democrat playbook for a conservative and libertarian voting base, which is why moderate candidates for president always lose. Dole, McCain, what's the last guy's name? Romney. They lose. If you want to win 2016, you have to get rid of moderates and get more extremists, people who actually believe in conservative principles. That's what you have to do. And the first battle is the 2014 midterms. Actually, the first battle was the Virginia-New Jersey elections in 2013. And the lesson that was learned from that, which is precisely what the establishment wanted, was a massive victory for their moderate rhino in New Jersey and a near loss for the conservative Republican in the Commonwealth of Virginia. If you allow that sort of thing to happen again in 2014, you probably won't lose the House because Obamacare is so friggin' unpopular. But you won't gain the Senate. And, of course, it doesn't matter anymore because Reid nuked it, so it's now a parliament. But 2016 will be really hard. So you've got to work every day. The most important thing you can do is not only take action to further conservatism and conservative candidates, the most important thing you can do is get other people involved. If you see the show out there, share it, retweet it. Get other people to listen, invite them. It doesn't mean you're endorsing me and Trog. It doesn't mean that you agree with everything we say. But you're telling conservatives and libertarians, think differently, act differently, and get involved. Because maybe you don't like politics. You know, they tell you, oh, yeah, I'm not into politics, so really don't send me that stuff. Well, if you're not into politics, you're an idiot. Because politics is into you. It's in your toilet, it's in your wallet, it's in your bathroom, it's in your school, it's in your job. It's everywhere. Soon it's going to be in your doctor's office. So get busy and do this. Now, when we're speaking about rhinos,
it's going to be in your proctal exam.
Boehner's going to have his finger up your ass. Here's the thing. One of the biggest rhinos right now is senior senator from Kentucky, who's also the minority leader of the alleged opposition party, the Democrats, and that's Senator Mitch McConnell. Now, this guy is one of the biggest rhinos out there. He was moderately wealthy when he got into the Senate. He's extremely wealthy now and entrenched and connected. And he should pretty much have an easy reelection. But if enough Americans support the people of Kentucky and support the candidates who are primarying this son of a bitch, it is entirely possible that he goes down. Now, one of the criticisms you always get is, well, that's true, Rex, but if we attack Mitch McConnell in the primary, he might not be able to beat the Democrat in the general election. Who cares? That's my response. Who cares? Because the fact is that if Mitch McConnell wins, sure, you've got a Republican seat in the Senate. But do you have a conservative seat? Do you have a constitutional seat? Do you have somebody that's going to audit the Fed and the Fed, really investigate the IRS, do something about these ridiculous taxes, repeal Obamacare, really? Because he's none of those things. So I don't care if it's a Democrat. It would be actually would be better in the sense that the same policies will go forward, but at least it won't sully the conservative name because Mitch McConnell claims to be conservative. Now, the first clip we have here is like 2 minutes, and this is Mitch McConnell talking about, you know, the shutdown and Obamacare. And then we'll comment on the other side.
Let me ask you about Senator Ted Cruz. He led this effort to tie the defunding of Obamacare to shutting down the government. He said he is not backing away. He says he will continue to do, and these are his words, anything he can to stop what he calls the train wreck that is Obamacare. How are you going to deal with that?
Well, I certainly agree with Senator Cruz that Obamacare is indeed a train wreck. I mean, a visit to the website is kind of like a trip to the Department of Motor Vehicles in your state. People can't, even if they can access the website, there's no way to get quotes. Even those who may be fortunate enough to sign up are going to find that the premiums are higher and the choices are fewer. One thing that all Republicans agreed on back in 2009 is that we thought Obamacare was a terrible mistake for the country. We still think that, and we're going to do everything we can in the future to try to repeal it. But that requires a Republican Senate and a different president. We have a math problem in the Senate in getting rid of Obamacare. It's the following math problem: 55 Democrats and 45 Republicans. We only control a portion of the government, and so that limits our ability to get rid of this horrible law.
But let me get back to what do you do about Senator Cruz? How do you deal with him? Trent Lott, your predecessor, the very conservative Republican from Mississippi, was asked by the Washington Post, and he said, you got to roll them. He said, we've got to have more pushback against these people who come to Washington and suddenly announce they have all the answers. When Senator Cruz tries this again, how will you respond to that?
Look, we've got a big conference with 45. I'd like to have 51. That would make me the majority leader instead of the minority leader. We have a lot of people with different points of view. We had some tactical differences about how to get at the repeal of Obamacare, but the fact that we have some tactical differences doesn't mean we don't all share the same goal. Obamacare is the worst piece of legislation that's been passed in the last half century. The single biggest step in the direction of Europeanizing our country. We need to get rid of it. If the American people will give us a majority in the Senate and a new president, that's exactly what we're going to do.
I have to tell you that.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, let's get rid of, you know,
how many
get
times
past
can I say bull crap in a row?
Yeah, let's get past his hokey Kentucky accent and his gentlemanly style. All right, notice the question there. What are you going to do about Ted Cruz? You've got to roll him. I mean, how did a guy who's only been in office 11 months become such a lightning rod? Oh, I don't know. Could it be because Ted Cruz is doing what he said he was going to do and actually devising strategies that would work, and the only reason that the legs are being cut out from under him is because of the Republican leadership like Mitch McConnell, who pretty much told you all these things you hate, we can't do anything to stop them until you give us the majority in the Senate and give us a president. Because all he wants is power. He doesn't want to roll any of this stuff back. He can do it. Our Constitution is set up so that a divided government with separation of powers, the minority can actually prevent things from happening that are dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Getting rolled
over. But the Republicans don't want to do that. Yeah, the Republicans don't want to do that. They just want to talk against it. In the meantime, all they're really seeking is to get you to be foolish enough to reelect them and give them more power so that they can be the ones wielding the power instead of the Democrats. But they're not going to roll back the power.
Well,
you want to say anything other than bullcrap?
Yeah, I do. I do. let me give you a perspective here. First of all, if the Republicans were unified and Cruz's power and momentum that he created – and that guy would have asked, if I would have been sitting where McConnell was sitting, and when he asked that question of, you know, some new guy. Well, let me explain something. Ted Cruz isn't a new guy. He was in the Bush administration. He was also the Solicitor General for the state of Texas and has argued and defeated the federal government in the Supreme Court. He is he's not some new guy fresh out of college. What do you mean, new guy that thinks he has all the answers? Anybody who has a brain knows that Obamacare was going to be a terrible mess and it was going to screw up our economy and screw up our healthcare system. So it isn't about being a new guy. He may be new in the Senate, but number one, he has a high-level degree, and he has a lot of experience with government already. So he's not some new guy. Oh, hey, I just got here from Finland, and I need to hang out for 10 years before I can speak. You know, he knows what he went there for. He was elected on a platform, you know, to fight for specific things while he was in Congress. He's not some new guy. That right there is a felonious, you know, it's back to that concept when we first started, is that word game. And I would argue that point right there. But you see, McConnell doesn't want to give away, you know, I noticed that he didn't want to attack Ted because he knows his butt's on the line in the upcoming election. And he knows that the grassroots, the Tea Party, the conservatives and everything else could really mess up his goal to be the majority leader. You know, you heard that. You know, I bet you he was drooling when he said that. But when you look at this concept, he didn't want to attack Cruz, but he didn't want to defend him either. He just said that typical canned thing. Republicans voted against this, and we knew Obamacare was going to be a failure. You know, that's a canned statement. Where's your solutions, and how are you going to get it done? Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't directly attack him for those very reasons you said, political pragmatism.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple fact is that they didn't shy from not only attacking Ted Cruz and Mike Lee behind closed doors, but some of them leaked that to the press. Most of the left-wing talking points against the hostage-taking, teabagger, extremist hard right came out of the Republican Party leadership,
mm-hmm.
not the Democrats. Okay, that's what people really have to understand. Now, you know, there's always confusion with personalities, and I really don't want to get into all that. But the one thing to keep in mind is, well, how come Rand Paul endorsed Mitch McConnell? Well, let's think about this for a second. Rand Paul is the junior senator from the same state as Mitch McConnell, who's the leader of the Senate for the party. Is that really a good fight for Rand Paul to get into? I mean, who's in charge of committee assignments? Is it possible that if Rand Paul goes toe-to-toe with Mitch McConnell, that he might not be grilling Janet Yellen about audit the Fed, that he might not be there talking about arming al-Qaeda in Syria on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee? You know, the thing is, you got to pick and choose your battles. People like Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Justin Amash, Trey Gowdy, these are principal people who are behind enemy lines in their own camp. They can't always publicly go toe-to-toe. They expect you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, to fight those battles for them and send in reinforcements so they can be more effective. Now, speaking of reinforcements and being more effective, there are people who are willing to stand up to Mitch McConnell. One of them is Matt Bevin. Now, I'm not from Kentucky, so I don't know all that much about this guy, but I've heard an interview here locally in Imperial City on WMAL. I got the clip here, actually, two of them for you. I don't even care if this guy's really not all that good, because let's face it, if he manages to beat McConnell and manages to beat the Democrat, he'll be the junior senator from Kentucky, and Rand Paul will then be the senior senator from Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
and Mitch McConnell won't be the minority or majority leader. That's a win, okay? So what you got to do is listen to this guy and see where he stands and why he's actually fighting against Mitch McConnell. Here's 5 minutes with Matt Bevin on WMAL, local station in the Imperial City.
Right now we are joined by Tea Party Republican candidate Matt Bevin. He is running for the Republican primary in the state of Kentucky. Now you might say, hold on a minute, Kentucky has two Republican senators already, Rand Paul and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. Why in God's earth would anyone primary one of those stalwart conservative Republicans? Well, Matt Bevin, why on earth are you primarying Senator Mitch McConnell, the most powerful Republican in the Senate?
It's a great question. Thanks for having me on. I wish indeed we had two stalwart conservative Republicans serving us. I would dare to say perhaps there's just one, and the reason I'm running against Mitch McConnell is that while he does claim to be a conservative, so many of his votes through the years, and even of late, have really been anything other than the votes of a conservative.
Well, now the other one, Rand Paul, who you just seem to suggest is a true conservative, he has endorsed Mitch McConnell. So how do you square that circle?
He has. He endorsed Mitch McConnell long before I ever got into this race. That has been an arrangement that was made now for quite some time, and he's staying with that, and I respect the fact that he's doing so. But Rand Paul is one vote. He'll walk into the voting booth on May 20th. He'll vote one time. Everyone who ultimately coalesced behind him within the Tea Party movement, within the GOP establishment itself, within all the Second Amendment groups, et cetera, every single group that ultimately coalesced behind him has already endorsed me or is supporting me. So I'm not too concerned about that at all. I respect Rand, and I think he's making decisions he needs to make for reasons that he has.
All right, so you say he's not conservative enough. I'm looking here at several ratings that say, well, the Campaign for Working Families gave Mitch McConnell a 100% approval rating. The National Right to Life gave him a 100% approval rating. The American Conservative Union gave him a 100% conservative rating. That's higher than those wussy rhinos, Tom Coburn, and Jim DeMint, who now runs the Heritage Foundation.
I'm going to tell Senator DeMint you called him a wussy rhino.
Well, apparently he, you know, Mitch McConnell has a more conservative record than Tom Coburn, for goodness sake.
It's a good point, Matt Bevin.
I think it's interesting. So much effort is sometimes put on making sure these scorecards look good, and nobody is better than Mitch McConnell at making sure that that they look good on paper. But I would ask you, is a conservative someone who would have voted for the whole multitude of bailouts using our money to bail out irresponsible companies that Mitch McConnell has? I don't think so. Would a conservative have voted 10 straight times in a row with no concessions to the contrary to raise the debt ceiling? Would a conservative have voted time and time again in 1986 for amnesty and in 2006 for amnesty? In 2007, and then turn around and change his vote after it failed to make it look like he was against it so that he'd look good on a scorecard. This is a man who is focused on the scorecard and not on his constituents, not on the will of the people, and not on doing the right thing.
But wait, these are independent groups that look at his record and they say, look, we find this guy to be acceptable to us. Why is he not acceptable to you?
It isn't a function of whether he's acceptable to me. I'm just one of his constituents at this time. I do take issue with the fact that he says one thing in Kentucky, but he does another thing in Washington. And I am in this race because I spent months traveling around the state before getting into this because people had asked me if I would consider doing so. And I said, I want to understand, first of all, is there a need for change? Do people really have an appetite for change? Are they willing to make a stance on that difference that they're looking for? And do I think I'm in a position to be able to offer them an alternative? And so, in doing so, it became clear that the people of Kentucky feel very disconnected. They want a true leader who will take them into the future. They do not see that 30 years of Mitch McConnell needs to be extended.
Matt Bevin is our guest. He is running in the Republican primary in Kentucky against Senator Mitch McConnell. And we had Ann Coulter on the show about a month ago. And we were talking about how it looks like Lindsey Graham in South Carolina is going to be primaried. And she said, absolutely, Lindsey Graham is part of the problem in Washington. He should be primaried. But then she said, but it is absolutely insane to primary Mitch McConnell. Matt Bevin, what do you know that Ann Coulter doesn't know? And Ann Coulter isn't a rhino, right?
I've never met Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter's never taken the time to speak with me or understand one thing about what the people of Kentucky are looking for or what the reasons for my being in this race are. So I can't speak to her thought process at all. All I know is that the people in Kentucky do not feel represented. They want someone who, at this time of financial crisis that we are in this nation and the unsustainable financial path that we're on, they want someone who's actually been in the private sector at least one day in their lives. They want someone who's created a job that the taxpayers haven't paid for.
Chris? You want to comment on that?
Sorry, I'm still messing with it. My other computer, trying to get it working. First of all, the rating system is a lot like polls. what I learned was I went in and did a rating system on Mr. McConnell, and he doesn't have a 100% rating system. He has about an 80% rating system, and if you look at some of the things that he's done, okay, you would see like this last debacle when they had the shutdown that Harry Reid did, not Ted Cruz. McConnell was behind the whole process to basically hand Obama everything that he wanted, including an open-ended debt ceiling that he didn't have to worry about or ask permission to, you know, write up new debts or sell more bonds around the world and keep the big spending going. You know, and that was actually McConnell's work that did that. So you have to be careful, and it's back to that thing we were talking about with words. You know, in other words, who are these people that claim he's 100% this or 100% that? And you have to look at their voting record and the things they stand for and voted on. You also have to look at, especially with people who are in minority position, you know, minority leadership or leadership position like Speaker of the House, and you have to look at the things that they've shoved through, you know, because you won't necessarily see their voting record on things on those types, that type of stuff. So as far as this goes, and this guy Bevin, you know, he needs to get some of his dialogue going a little bit. You know, he's fighting a big fight. He's fighting a very well-funded fight. And I don't know that much about him personally. You know, this is all new to me and you. And the same thing with McConnell. I mean, not McConnell, but the other guy. Who's the other guy? Graham, you know, in his situation, you know, and the people that are running against him. I learned a long time ago that people lie. Polling agencies lie. They set up the questions so that you answer them a certain way. It's like this. Are you in favor of the Tea Party? You're going to get a pretty low rating in the population. Well, why is that? Because the media and the right and the left spend all their time beating up the Tea Party, calling them extremists. And you even have that in that clip that you played in the beginning that has that section from that HBO show with that, you know, the Dumb and Dumber guy on that show, you know, saying all that crap about the Tea Party. Well, when people don't bother to get off their butts and go out and actually do research and get to know what does the Tea Party stand for, why is it there, you know, what are they fighting for, what are their core values, things like that. If people don't do that and they watch HBO, they're going to walk away thinking they're a bunch of crazy extremists. And it's not the case at all. Now, the Tea Party rose up because of government unaccountability. That was really the basic primary function of the Tea Party. So if you change the way you ask the question, do you believe that the government is too big? Yes, most of America. Do you believe the government is corrupt and that there should be reforms? Yes, most of America. Do you believe that we're taxed enough already? TEA? Yes, most of Americans, except the ones that want the rich people to pay more and more and more and more. They have no clue what's going on with, you know, who pays the taxes in this country. So it's all about words. When you look at McConnell, when you look at Graham, when you look at these guys, Cornyn, the rest of them that have been in there, you know, my favorite dialogue or words that I say all the time is oust all Bush-era rhinos. You want to solve the problems of this country, they are a bunch of Democrats. They spend like Democrats. They compromise, constantly compromise. You look at the last 5 years. It is mind-boggling to me that this information is not out there besides us flapping our jaws. Debt ceiling increases every time. Tax increases, yes. Any kind of reform in government during a very bad economic recovery, no. We look at the unemployment figures coming out. Everybody's bragging about 7%, which really it's about 15% because the way they count the rolls, just like the damn CPI. There's so many fundamental things they don't look at in the CPI that you have to pay for, like milk, you know, things like that, basic cost of living items. So when you have to get past the surface of this stuff and look at the facts and make decisions. If you are tired of compromise and you want your country back, then you need to educate yourself and vote appropriately and donate and do all the other things you're supposed to do.
Yeah, quit electing jerk-offs like Mitch McConnell. I mean, and the point that you made, which I think was really important, and you covered a lot of stuff, but the one that really struck me was don't just look at their voting record, okay? Because the fact is that, for example, John Boehner, as Speaker, often doesn't vote, right?
Yeah.
He you know, has his whip drum up the votes, and he pushes the other guys, and then they vote. However, when Justin Amash got a bill on the floor to rein in the spying, the illegal spying against the Constitution of all Americans, and he got quite a lot of Republican support there, Johnny Boehner found it important enough to get out on the floor to vote against Amash's bill, which was defeated. Now, that's a rare occasion, because what they'll do is that they'll push votes, and then they'll pick and choose who's going to, you know, cave, maybe someone who's not running this year, or somebody who's going to retire or something like that, and then they'll get the other guys to go vote where it doesn't count in order to drum up their voting record. It was sort of like why they voted against Obamacare 40 times when they knew it was going to get killed by Reid in the Senate. But then when it actually counted, when Ted Cruz tied it to the continuing resolution, they fought tooth and nail to beat up on Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. And Boehner and Cantor actually put defunding language in there in such a way that it would pass the House, go over the Senate, and Reid could just strip it out without any problem. And we caught on to that. And because of grassroots pressure, Boehner had to actually act conservative. Of course, McConnell screwed that one up. And the thing to really understand, okay, is that just because they have an R or an elephant on their jersey doesn't make them your friend. And just because you have a choice of a socialist Democrat or a corporatist Republican doesn't mean the corporatist Republican is the lesser of two evils. Push the candidates that really matter, because if you don't stand up and do it now, they're going to understand that, hey, you know what, as long as we give them something slightly better than the crap that the Democrats are offering, they'll vote for us. That's what they tried with the anybody but Obama strategy in 2012 so that you would vote for Mitt Romney. And what happened? Just like Dole, just like McCain, just like Bush, he lost. And frankly, I'm happy about it. Oh, but Rex, you like Obama? No, I can't stand that guy. He is a usurper. He's an extra-constitutional legal guy that should be impeached. But the simple fact is, if you think things would be better now if Mitt Romney were president, you're out of your mind. You'd have Romney care. It would be just as bad as Obamacare. You'd have already bombed the crap out of Syria, and the Republicans wouldn't even have to pretend to be conservative. That's what would happen. Now, terms are important. They label you an extremist, but what you are is a principled conservative who's right where the founding fathers were, and that's where this country has to go back. Now, it ain't going to happen overnight. So just because you can't get 100% of what you want today doesn't mean you don't try. You work towards it. It took us over 100 years to get here. We ain't going to fix it in 2014 or 2016. It's going to take longer. But if you don't start now, we're at that tipping point where it might be irrecoverable. So you got to get busy, and you got to watch out for those guys who come in and appeal to specific niches, whether it's Sarvis pretending he's a libertarian in the Commonwealth of Virginia, or Rick Santorum, who might be a very nice guy and a good Catholic dad and all that stuff. He's a shitty politician. You know, he comes in to take away the conservative Christian vote from Newt Gingrich and, you know, from Ron Paul, right? Or this Peter King guy or Chris Christie who say that they're conservative. Well, Mitt Romney said he was a severe conservative. Did you buy that crap? Listen to these guys.
Rhinos is an insult. It means, as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party,
but
when
he is planning to switch parties. Okay, go ahead.
No, I actually resent that question. I am a lifetime Republican. I was at Barry Goldwater rallies in the 1960s. I have a conservative rating of 75%, and I am absolutely proud to be Republican. There's nothing at all Republican about shutting down the government when you don't get what you want. There's nothing at all about a Republican, about people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, who want a filibuster against drones, which defend America against terrorist attack. So no, as far as I'm concerned, those guys are the rhinos. I'm the real Republican.
If you take a look at the government shutdown right now, all the talk about that, it's sort of really upstaged some of the glitches
in the rollout of Obamacare. You oppose Obamacare, but a lot of people aren't necessarily paying attention to it because of this huge, and it's understandable, this huge fight over the government shutdown and raising the debt ceiling. How do you feel about that?
I think President Obama should send a campaign contribution to Ted Cruz. He has done more to boost, to help Obamacare than anyone. I mean, the numbers on Obamacare have gone up by about 7% during the worst week that it should be having because of such a terrible, terrible breakout that it had. It was just terrible. And yet all the attention was on the government shutdown. And so, again, Ted Cruz wanted to stop Obamacare. They wanted to defund it. That's what his supporters wanted to do. And instead, Obamacare is going ahead. It's being fully funded. And it is not getting the criticism that it should. If anything, its popularity is going up, which is really...
And I fight very strongly against libertarian influence within the Republican Party and the conservative movement. I don't think the libertarians have it right when it comes to what the Constitution's all about. I don't think they have it right as to how our what our history is. And we are not a group of people that believes in no government. I've got some real concerns about this movement within the Republican Party and the Tea Party movement to sort of refashion conservatism. And I will vocally and publicly oppose it and do my best to correct the record.
Is it over? You know, when I hear that Rick Santorum vid, and I remember the primary, and I remember him up there in the early primary states, and that ad that came out and him saying he was the Tea Party candidate, I thought I was going to lose it. Because when you realize, and again, this goes back to that same group that fought against what Newt was trying to do, which was reform and cut government and reform things, and they went through the whole Bush era. And if you get away from the R and the D conversation and just look at that whole Bush era, those 8 years, look at the debt ceiling increases and you know, the endless wars and the invasion of countries and, you know, the Patriot Act and the expansion of the Department of Education, all that stuff came out of full control Republican House, Senate, and presidency. And this is where you have to stop and ask yourself, what the heck is my party, well, whatever, my party, my side doing, and why are they doing this? I said it earlier in the show. Kennedy is more conservative than most of these guys, and their voting records are right there to look at. When you got that guy King getting up there going, I'm the real Republican, and I have a 75%, you know, conservative rating. 75%? Three-quarters? Are you kidding me? You know, that means that 25% of the time you have compromised on major issues that impact our country, whether it be – and typically, unfortunately, it's things that you and I have to pay for. That's the problem that people need to get clear in your mind. What do you want your country to look like and how you want it to operate? And a lot of that ties to – a conversation that I like to have, but we don't have much because it's not a real popular one, and that's economics. Understanding economics and why we're so screwed up, and when you really study economics at a federal level, you will realize not just with the Fed issue, but also in voting in terms of voting for debt ceiling increases. What was it? Five times these guys voted during the Bush era to increase debt. You're still, you know, yeah, we could point fingers at Obama all day long about some of the poor things, choices, and decisions he's made. But you have to look at what we're still living from that 8 years of the Bush administration. And I'm not saying George W. Bush was a bad guy, but he definitely had some people around him that have helped lead us down this path. Obama just picked up the ball and ran with it and doubled down on everything. You know, you hear that criticism going on all the time. Obama's, you know, doubled down on Bush policies. Yeah, and that's the point. Number one, Democrats are idiots if they think Obama's their guy because he's just a corporatist tool. And on the other side, you have to realize that the people in power of the House and the Senate that are handing Obama everything he asked for, you know, are Republicans. And you got to say to yourself, 2014, I have the opportunity to change some of these things. Now, I don't think, in fact, I know it for a fact, but not all rhinos are being primaried. And there's some decent guys that need to be supported. Amash, for one, okay, that he's being primaried by some guy that doesn't even know what he's doing by, you know, the Rove RNC machine trying to get Amash out of there. And Amash is one of those guys I wish all of our representatives did what he does, which is he posts everything he does, every vote, and why he voted the way he votes. You don't have to go look him up on some website. The guy just go to Facebook, and you can see he talks to his constituents. He talks to the world. Here's who I am. Here's what I believe. Here's how I voted. Here's why I voted the way I voted. You don't got to go to some conservative unit or Heritage and look up his voting record to figure out what he voted on, because he speaks it and puts it on the table. That's, you know, when you have a 6% approval rating in Congress, and these guys getting up there bragging that, we're the one. No, we're the one. No, we're the conservative. No, we're the real Republican. It's kind of like, are you kidding me? It's like junior high school all over again. If they have to tell you what they are, when you can go look at their voting record and see what they stand for the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years they've been in there, too long, in my opinion, you know, when you can look at that stuff and go, they're lying. They're the wrong person to be in there representing you, because they're no longer representing you. They're living for their wealth, their power, their position, you know, and they need to be held accountable. They need to retire. And I'm sure at one time they were decent people. I don't know what happens to people. You live back there, I don't. But there's obviously
I'm not sure about people
after about 10, 15 years. Well,
yeah, they put something in the Potomac and then they drink it. But no, I think you nailed it right there with Amash telling you what he does, why he does it, so he's representing you. These guys don't represent you, and so, you know, you can throw your arms up and go, well, I'm not going to vote, or I'm going to go vote an alternate party, and at the local level,
stupid.
You should. If you have a local independent or alternate party candidate running for local office, by all means, support that guy, get him elected, you know, win a couple of legislatures, get a couple of governorships. But on the national level, and this is a national show, we're not talking about local politics here, there's only two games. It's a duopoly, it's the Democrats or the Republicans. The Republicans are not your friends, but the party is just an organization. It was founded in 1860, so not a single person who was there when it started is alive now. It's a different party. This is a party that did bring you Ronald Reagan. It brought you Newt Gingrich. It gave you Ron Paul for 40 years. It also happens to be the party that's given you all sorts of crap. Now, you mentioned Bush is a good guy. I don't know much about him. Maybe he's a good guy. Maybe he's not a good guy. Irrespective. As president, he effed up. He effed up because he is the one that created all of these messes that gave Obama all this power for him to abuse. So quit playing the my team, their team game, or I'll settle for the lesser bad team, and take over the team with people who stand up for stuff that matters. They're going to call you an extremist. They're going to call you a teabagger. They're going to go after Rand Paul. They're going to go after Ted Cruz. They're going to try to, you know, primary Justin Amash. They're going to take out Trey Gowdy because he's got these impeachment hearings. You have to be the defense of these guys. These guys, and I don't care if you like their personalities. I don't care if you agree with every position. The fact is that they are at least working effectively to the extent that they can within the minority party that is working against them to further a constitutional agenda. You need to support that. And not just 2 weeks before the election. 2014 is happening right now. Karl Rove's conservative kill packs, the so-called conservative victory project, is out gunning to protect rhinos. Yeah, out to protect rhinos and get rid of conservatives and libertarians. There's another one, Main Street something. They're out to gut conservatives and protect rhinos. Now, you know, you say, well, but if we primary Mitch McConnell, then the Tea Party candidate might lose and we'll get a Democrat. Well, if Mitch McConnell wins, what did you win? A guy that promoted Obamacare, a guy that promotes war, spending, a guy that does everything that Republicans don't like while he speaks in his hokey Kentucky accent about being conservative. That's what you want? That's a victory for you? If you think that's a victory, fold up the shop now. Let's all become Marxist Keynesians.
Yeah, I actually did a post earlier today where I don't remember which thread it was on, but I said, you know, if you're not going to vote quality people in that do what they say they're going to do, you know, and stand for the things that in your party, you know, when you look at the platform, if they're not going to stand for that, you might as well vote for a dang Democrat and let it crash sooner, because it's going to crash anyway. The whole system is going down faster and faster and faster. It's the worst I've ever seen it, and this is not conspiracy theory crap. You know, they have run us to over $17 trillion in debt. You look at Medicare, it's $35 trillion, you know, in unfunded liabilities. We look at our country as a whole, we're at somewhere around, you know, $80 to $120 trillion, depending on whose analysis you look at. We are so far beyond any reality. We've been off the gold standard since, who was that guy? Oh, yeah, Republican, Nixon, took us off the gold standard. And if you look at the charts from that point forward, it's astronomical. You know, they just went sky high because they took that foundational standard away, that gold standard. So when you look at all these things, you look at our across the world, you know, you look at the wars, you look at our indebtedness, you look at our open borders. I mean, it's a mess. And it's either and if you allow, if the Democrats get a hold of it, they want to crash it and rebuild it in some socialistic European, you know, vision that they have. The Republicans are kind of like, oh, 75%, like Mr. King, you know. Oh, yeah, we're just 75% there, you know. So it's still going off that cliff. And so if you want that socialistic utopia, then what the hell? We've got the parties in place that are going to give it to you. So why, you know, vote for Democrat? Who cares? It's going to happen anyway. Or
well, it's exactly what the Democrats want.
Yeah. Or you wake up and you start looking around. You going, okay, I'm going to vote for people. I mean, you know what is amazing to me, Rex, is you look at the noise and the energy and the money and the news stories around four or five guys. That just blows me away. When I look at Rand or Lee or Cruz or Amash or Gowdy or, you know, any of these top conservative players, look at the noise that they create, how loud that noise. That's only a handful of guys. They are so afraid of these people, you know, that it's just mind-boggling, because you're talking about 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 guys out of 535. So that shows you right there that the status and the liberals are scared to death. And here's why. Because those people, those extremists, represent the majority of the way people think in this country. The problem with this country is during presidential election, we can barely get 50% of the potential voting population off their butts and turn off the TV and go do a little bit of research and vote. And on off years, which is what's coming up in 2014, it's about 35%. If you look at 2010 and the success of the Tea Party movement, it was less than 2% increase in voting, people getting up and getting busy and getting out there and voting. And that gave us control of the House. It broke the supermajority in the Senate. And it gave us 34 governors and 24 totally controlled Republican states. Less than 2% more people got off their butts and did something about the greatest country in the history of the world and went out and voted and got involved. And that's all
Brilliant.
You need to do is you don't have to be, you know, Rex and Trog and do the crap we do. We wonder why in the hell we do it every day. You know, you don't have to be that involved. But there's just some fundamental things. If you educate yourself, get involved, learn, listen, and then go out and then support good candidates, you'll turn this country around in two voting cycles. It's that simple.
Yeah, and the fact that
you're sit on your butt, and we're just going to go the direction we're going. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yep. No, I think you're right, and it's not require that much effort. I mean, some of us are more involved than others, but what it does require is that you do something
other
than vote and bitch at your TV. We're crazy, but you don't have to be as crazy as Rex and Trog. But you have to do something other than vote, and bitch at your television.
What you need to do is get other people, especially Republican voters. Now, when I say Republican voters, there are a lot more people in this country that tend to vote for Republican than there are members of the Republican Party. Most people don't join the Republican Party because, for the most part, the Republicans suck. But they feel that there is no other choice. Now, there are other choices. You got the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, you got independent candidates, Green Party, whatever the hell you want. But the real issue is that in order to get into the debates, to have media time, to get interviewed, to get your voice out there, it's either Republican or Democrat. And they play this game to make you think that they're in opposition when they're in fact not. But every once in a while, people actually believe the stuff that the Republican Party says it stands for, and they run on that platform, and before you know it, they get in office. And then, of course, the Republicans spend more energy beating up on those guys than they do beating up on the opposition. Well, you need to do more of that, and the way you do that is just what Chris said. Get other people involved. You might only be able to do so much. You can only make so many calls. You can only send in so much money. You can only volunteer so much time. But if you can get 10 other people who tend to vote Republican or actually conservative and libertarian to actually think and act before the first week of November, then you create a force multiplier and you actually start making some changes. You get more Justin Amashes. You get more Trey Gowdy's. You get more Ted Cruz's. You get more Rand Paul's. That's what you have to do. These guys are out there busting their asses and taking all the arrows for you. The least you could do is send in some support. That's the key. Now, the thing about, rhinos, at least if we have to be more moderate, then we can win some races. Well, first of all, generally speaking, moderates don't win. Don't give me this crap about Chris Christie in New Jersey. New Jersey's not the country. New Jersey is a pretty unique place as far as that goes. The idea is that who cares if the rhinos win? I mean, you can say, oh, the Republican Party has a majority now. So what? If they're going to act like Democrats, what difference does it make? You need to get conservatives and libertarians in the Republican Party to win. Yeah. You need to get them in there. Listen, the Democrats want moderates. The Democrats want squishes. The Democrats love this so-called civil war because they know that the conservatives are a formidable enemy that can defeat them. And they know that moderates are easy to handle. That's what it is. Chris, believe it or not, we've only got 40 minutes live left, folks. We're probably going to run a little bit long trying to get all this stuff in because I'm sure we're going to have a lot of issues to address regarding the budget cave, the sequester, and all the crap this coming Sunday night, 10 p.m. Remember, Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern is our standard broadcast time. We'll do specials when we need to. We're going to try to bring you part two of what's likely to be a 10-part series about what authentic conservatism is. You can listen to part one anytime you want. Just go to on Blog Talk Radio, go to Liberty Thunder, scroll down the page, and look for Conservative Chain Reaction. We covered maybe one and a half of Russell Kirk's 10 Principles of Conservatism. Most people equate conservatism with republicanism, and most people think that libertarianism is something that's alien to conservatism, when in fact there's a lot of overlap. There are certainly some big differences, and Rick Santorum focused on those big differences to promote rhinoism over and against the libertarian impulse of sound free market economics, sound money, and political diffusion, which if he was really a conservative, he'd be for that. Obviously, he's not. But you can go listen to that show. Just go to Liberty's Thunder, listen to Conservative Chain Reaction, share it with people. That is a show that doesn't have a lot of current news in it. It's pretty much more conservative principle. Get that out there. We'll try to bring you part two, three, whatever, whenever we can. Just go to Liberty's Thunder on Facebook and like our page. We just hit 300 likes for an amateur blog talk radio show with no money. In fact, this cost us money to do this. That's pretty good, but we'd like to see that number grow. But go like the page in your newsfeed. You'll find out when we're doing these specials and these broadcasts. The important thing is you got to do something. Just do something every day to get people aware that there is a battle for the heart and soul of this country, and it is occurring within the Republican Party right now. Don't worry about what the Democrats are doing. They're going to do what they do. And if you don't like it and you want to stop it, you need a real opposition party, not a bunch of squishes that keep handing them everything they want while speaking rhetorically to get your votes and your money. Just understand something. We're going to play this four-minute clip and then hopefully roll into some other stuff. But listen to what's going on here, because Democrats like moderate squishes. And the Republican leadership is telling you the only way you can win elections is with moderate squishes. That's a bunch of horse crap.
Everything has changed in the last few years. Conservatives used to take it, and we're not taking it anymore.
The Romney camp seems to be pushing bipartisanship. You got real close to a deal last year with John Boehner. I know you like John Boehner. He's a regular guy. The Speaker of the House, he's a Republican. How, if you get reelected, it looks like this is so close, how do you get back to that, really making it work like it did up here in the storm country of Jersey, where everybody seemed to be working together across party lines?
Look, I think the fever will have broken. You have this, you know, you have this sort of the Tea Party wing of the party controlling their party. I've said this to you before. What we need is a Republican Party. Yeah. We need leaders that can control the party. And I think you're going to see the fever break. I think you're going to see, well, Obama's reelected. The idea we can't let that happen is done. Now it's going to be okay, man. We just got to get some. I'm not going to tell you who. I've already been talking.
Okay, because the Eisenhower Republicans you grew up with, the reasonable people like Bill Scranton and Christy Whitman, right? And Olympia Snowe, you mentioned this feature. Yeah. They're left. They're gone.
No, but
Paul Arlen's passed away. Yeah. All the people that
but
wanted to
deal. But there's still some solid Republican conservatives who understand what principled compromise means, and they're not wrapped up in ideological purity. There's still, look, I could name for you, I think there's a dozen Republican senators, and I think I could name you 2.5, 3 dozen Republican House members, who once this election is over, they kind of get a get-out-of-jail-free card. Because up to now it's been, if you don't stick with this hard right-edge thing, we're going to primary. If you don't stick with it, and so I just think you're going to, look, you and I have been through this before. You saw it when Jerry Falwell, quote, controlled the Republican Party, which he never fully did. You saw it when Newt Gingrich first came in. I mean, the fever breaks.
Nordquist or whatever his name is, he does control.
Right. But right now he does. Instead of them signing the pledge to Nordquist, they should be signing the pledge to the middle.
He's doing it again, just as he did in 2008. He thought the country had given him a blank sheet of paper to work on. He did the stimulus spending. He went from 70% support down to below 50. He lost the House. Now he gets reelected with less strength, not against a war hero, but against a guy from Massachusetts, and the Republicans have the House, and he thinks somebody made him king.
Fuels camp has been calling on Republicans to not back down on the tax increase pledge that they have made.
So are you saying then, for PR purposes, that they should give in to Obama on the tax rate?
Not exactly. I guess I am.
It is the night of the long knives.
Establishment pushing out fiscal conservatives. Speaker of the House John Boehner just removed 4 of the most fiscally conservative congressmen in Washington from finance and budget committees.
The Speaker removing 4 conservative congressmen from key committees, a move seen by some as a way to close ranks over a potential fiscal cliff deal with the White House.
Now, all 4 of these congressmen were part of a group of conservatives backed by the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement who weren't afraid to vote against John Boehner during the last session of Congress.
But their removal from the committee and Boehner's proposal to increase tax revenue $800 billion are supported by Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Whip Kevin McCarthy, and Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan.
They're sending a message that you need to go along a bit more. This isn't going to be like the last Congress.
A robe out there backing John Boehner to the hilt, $500,000 TV ad.
This could prove to be a real fork in the road. The Club for Growth is warning Boehner he could lose his speakership. But South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint, who is leaving the Senate to head up Heritage Foundation, also has some issues with what Boehner has been doing. And it's all about this counter offer to the president on tax increases. The conservative blog Red State went after him. Freedom Works, which backs tax Tea Party groups.
All those House and Senate members are up next time around.
Right.
They're going to start saying, hey, man, I no longer have an obligation to stick with the right of my party to say we're going to defeat this guy. He's there 4 more years.
That was Vice President Joe Moron talking about Republicans who will now feel free after the election to not be beholden to the hard right of their party, which is basically those of us that want fiscal conservatism and the Constitution. And you notice he took a dig there. It happened when Newt Gingrich came in. You're damn right it did, because he took a liberal Democrat who was doing all the same things Obama's doing, nationalized, socialized, corporatized health care, stimulus spending, all that stuff, and we got 4 balanced budgets, granted baseline, but at least they were more balanced. We got welfare reform and a huge tax cut and 11 million jobs.
And a reduction.
They don't want the ceiling. Yeah, they don't want that. Okay, the Democrats don't want that. They want squishes and they want moderates. And you notice that John Boehner removed the fiscal conservatives like Amash and Holzkamp from the financial committees, right? And he put Paul Ryan there,
and now Paul Ryan is caving on the sequester and on taxes and all that kind of stuff. We'll find out more about it later this week. We'll see what the votes look like, and we'll talk about that Sunday night at 10 p.m. But you notice that they purged the conservatives from those committees, and now we've got squishes running the financial house with Obama as president. That's what John Boehner did. And what did the Republicans do? Well, I think something like 14 of them voted for a different Speaker of the House. All you needed was 17, and he would have lost, but they didn't have the balls to do it. And what did they do in the RNC? They re-elected Priebus. Mark Willis, who was running against Priebus for chairmanship of the party, wasn't even nominated because people wouldn't nominate him because of the control that the consultant, lobbyist, establishment complex has on the RNC. That's what you're up against. That's what you have to fight, because otherwise they talk conservative. You know, they put Paul Ryan out there as Mr. Conservative. The Democrats attack him as Mr. Conservative, and he's giving them all that they want. Remember, Paul Ryan gave an impassioned speech on the floor of the House in favor of TARP before Obama was president, when Bush was president.
You mean suspending free enterprise to save it?
Yeah, it's always fun to play that clip, but I got a different – I got a different Bush clip to play when we try to switch into foreign policy. We've only got 30 minutes live, folks. If you want to listen live, there's a bunch of you listening now. You have to call in and listen on your phone, 646-649-1013, 646-649 or 1013. If you're in podcast, just keep rolling. Go, Chris.
Here's – when you look – and this is that historical perspective. When you look at the country around the Carter era, it was a mess. Our economy was a mess. Inflation was out of control. He was stumbling all over the place. And when Reagan came in, after the same group of people, including a young Karl Rove, on the floor of the Republican convention fighting against Reagan when Ford won in order to lose to Carter, okay, the moderate. When you look at that historical point, but when you look at when Reagan won the first time and then the second time, he won huge. He won one year, I think it was the second year, he won all but one state, okay, and Washington, D.C. You know, and they're all nuts there. You live there, so you know. But you have to look at why. When I listen to old Reagan clips, I hear freedom. I hear fiscal responsibility. I hear, you know, the whole concept of peace through strength. In other words, we're not here, you know, to go out and, you know, drop bombs all over the world and blow up the damn world, you know, and have perpetual war. We have real issues. We need to deal with them, but we need to be smart how we deal with them. He spoke directly to the people, and he rose up the whole country behind him. And you look at that, and then you look at the slew of moderates that the Republican Party ran after that. I mean, I'm not quite sure how George W. Bush won, because that first election was really bizarre. But when you look at the strength,
you mean the great
earlier,
the great Karl Rove strategy to have the Supreme Court decide the election.
Oh my God! No kidding. Yeah, that was a debacle of immense proportions. But here's what we're facing: is you have to decide what country you want, because if you want a socialistic European country, then the group that's in power on both sides will hand you that. It's really, I mean, it really boils down to that. You know, if that's your perception of what kind of country you want, if you want to continue to work, you want government to continue to go in debt, because sooner or later, I was reading some articles because I like to look at the whole world economy, because, you know, the world buys our debt and trades with us. And I was looking at an article about Merkel and her restructuring of Germany, which is the only stable country in the EU. And then you have Russia, which is now the largest European economy. And then you have China, and you have the BRICS nations, and you have all this stuff going on. Merkel just said that they're not doing debt anymore. Okay, well, that includes buying our bad debt, because that's what happens. The Fed prints the money, sells government bonds. Private sector is not buying government bonds anymore because they know it's crap. It doesn't pay, and the country's, you know, racing off the end of a cliff. So they have to either buy it back themselves, which is just insanity, for somebody to print money to buy their own debt. I mean, I don't know if anybody understands basic insanity, but that fits. And China said they're no longer going to buy our debt. Okay, so who in the hell is going to buy our debt, Rex?
Your 401k, I guess.
I guess.
That's what it's going to come
to. Or they just keep printing, you know, and keep printing and keep printing. I've never seen this in our history. It's pretty phenomenal. So anyway, you know, what it boils down to is that we are at a crossroads, and all 2014 can change the direction this country can go. But it's not going to change if you don't replace the rhinos who are in power in the House and Senate. It's really that simple. You know, we fought hard trying to get a new Speaker of the House, but it was pulling eye teeth, you know.
Well, it's up to Ohio to ditch Johnny Boehner and not send him back here, that crying little piece of useless beef jerky. Just don't send him back, Ohio, or we're going to boot you out of the union. Now, the interesting thing is look at what happened in 2010. I mean, that was huge, right? And the message that we sent was, hey, Republicans, we're keeping an eye on you too. Well, they appropriated the Tea Party, and we got all caught up in the Obamacare stuff, and they just rolled on with their usual rhino crap. But then came this, CR deal, Obamacare defunding, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, and you saw the remnant of what you did in 2010 stand up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Send in reinforcements in 2014. Make it another 2010, but this time don't fall for, quote, Tea Party losers like Marco Rubio, but get more people like Justin Amash, Louis Gohmert, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul. That's what you have to work on. And the thing you have to remember is they're going to come hard at those guys. But every time that they attack those guys, they're attacking you. They're calling you the extremist. They're calling you the teabagger. They're calling you the hard right legislative arsonist. Are you those things? What are you really asking for? You're asking for the government to not spend more than it takes in. You're asking for the government not to rip so much money out of the economy that it doesn't function and jobs aren't created. You're asking them not to start new programs that are unsustainable when the ones that we already have are totally broke. You're asking them not to go blow up the world in the name of democracy. You're asking them to, not unregulate, okay, but you're asking them to deregulate the regulations that are hampering real economic growth and only favoring certain corporations. That's what you're asking them to do. That's not an extreme position. That's a sober, fiscally responsible, smart, prudent approach. Right now what you have is a Fed that is so out of control that is pilfering money out of the economy at unbelievable rates. And who gets hurt the most? The poor and the middle class. The 0.0001% uber wealthy, they've never been wealthier. This isn't trickle-down. This isn't Reaganomics. This is inflation theft, and the root of the problem is the Federal Reserve. Rand Paul has an audit the Federal Reserve bill. Did you make a call to support that? Did you tell your senator that he'd better get on board with Rand Paul? Do you want him to keep pressing Janet Yellen? These are the things that matter. Now, you have to keep in mind, in 2008, right, here comes this unknown senator from Illinois. He's smooth-talking when he has a teleprompter, that is. And he's got all this hopey-changey stuff, and all the liberals fell for it, right? Well, did it turn out to be so liberal and progressive? No. The guy is a corporatist shill running a Marxist playbook which serves the corporations here at home and a Saudi-Israeli foreign policy which doesn't serve the interests of the United States abroad. No hopey-changey there. It's just more of the same usual crap. Well, 8 years before that, you Republicans fell for your own hopey-changey bullshit. You fell for a sober-minded Texas businessman with a name you recognized who was going to rein in our crazy foreign policy, not being the policeman of the world and all that stuff. And what did you get? The war on terror, the Department of Homeland Defense, the TSA, the Patriot Act.
The NSA.
And don't give me this crap that, oh, it was only because of 9/11. This country was born in war. We fought an 8-year war against the greatest empire and military the world had ever seen, and yet we furthered liberty. So don't give me this crap that, oh, it's a war situation, we have to give up our freedom. Screw that, because if you give them up in war, then what they'll do is they'll just constantly keep you in a state of war on poverty, war on drugs, war on terror. They keep
waging these wars against ideas and tactics so that the wars never end. Here's
yeah,
3 minutes.
They never fix anything.
Yeah, here's they fix it. They fix it. I mean, they break it, and then they tell you they're going to fix it by breaking it more, Chris. But listen to this. This is George W. Bush before he was president, when he was running for president as former governor from Texas, telling you how sober he's going to be.
Should the people of the world look at the United States governor and say, should they fear us? Should they welcome our involvement? Should they see us as a friend, everybody in the world? How would you project us around the world as president?
Yeah, I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be. So I'm not exactly sure where the vice president is coming from, but I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you. I just don't think it's the role of the United States to walk into a country and say, we do it this way, so should you. It really depends upon how our nation conducts itself in foreign policy. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. If we're a humble nation but strong, they'll welcome us. And our nation stands alone right now in the world in terms of power, and that's why we've got to be humble. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll view us that way, but if we're a humble nation, they'll respect us. Maybe I misunderstand where you're coming from, Mr. Vice President, but I think the United States must be humble and must be proud and confident of our values, but humble in how we treat nations that are figuring out how to chart their own course. Make a couple
sure,
of comments.
Sure, absolutely, sure.
Somalia started off as a humanitarian mission and then changed into a nation-building mission, and that's where the mission went wrong. The mission was changed. And as a result, our nation paid a price. And so I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation building. You mentioned Haiti. I wouldn't have sent troops to Haiti. I didn't think it was a mission worthwhile. It was a nation building mission. I think what we need to do is convince people who live in the lands they live in to build the nations. Maybe I'm missing something here. I mean, we're going to have kind of a nation building core from America. One of the problems we have in the military is we're in a lot of places around the world, and I mentioned one, and that's the Balkans. I'd very much like to get our troops out of there. If we don't stop extending our troops all around the world in nation-building missions, then we're going to have a serious problem coming down the road, and I'm going to prevent that.
I'm concerned that we're over-deployed around the world.
I don't want to be the world's policeman. I want to be the world's peacemaker.
Your question was deployment. The force must be strong enough so that the mission can be accomplished. And the exit strategy needs to be well-defined. A lot of people are sick and tired of the bitterness in Washington, D.C., and therefore they don't want any part of politics. They look at Washington and see people pointing fingers and casting blame and saying one thing and doing another. It needs somebody in office who will tell the truth. That's the best way to get people back in the system.
Wow. Who was that guy? We should have him as president. Oh, wait. He was.
That was Ron Paul. Oh, wait. No, it wasn't.
Isn't it funny how when they want to get elected, they all want to sound like Reagan?
Or Ron Paul.
Or a little bit of both. Yeah. I mean, it's mind-boggling when you hear this stuff. So I think people need to go back and re-listen to that, because his whole concept was, hey, we're the most powerful country in the world. We shouldn't be stomping on other people. We shouldn't be telling other people how to run their countries. We shouldn't be, you know, nation building. Hello. You know, if you're going to fight a war, you're going to have a problem going there. You know, take care of business, kick some butt, take names, come home. And tell them if you do it again, we'll come back and stomp on you again. In other words, almost everything that this country has done in the last, well, you could argue this point, but if we just look at current times, because that's relevant to what we're talking about in terms of the political climate in Washington, D.C., everything in the last 12 years is against most everything that people believe in or want. And when you look at congressional approval rating at 6%, new number, and then you see these guys get up, what has compromise done in the last 5 years? Besides make the Republicans look weak, create division in the party, run about 10% of the Republican voters off, okay, you know, from the numerical drop. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what their strategy is because it ain't working. People are not happier. They don't see reform. They don't see recovery in the economy. I don't care what the television tells you. And anybody who follows the stock market knows and knows anything about the Fed printing all that money knows it's all fake money. You know, it isn't getting down to us, the people, and we're paying for it. You know, inflation hasn't even begun to hit. There's so many factors that are against core values of what makes a healthy country, what makes a spiritually healthy country in terms of, you know, people's attitudes and opinions of the country. You know, the corruption is out of control. I mean, how in the hell do you spend $650 million on a website that should have cost $5 to $10 million based on quotes I've heard from professional companies who build these things, i.e. Obamacare, on a contract that was a no-bid contract for a company in a down economy that's from another country? I mean, when you look at the stuff going on, that's just one case. Let's take GM, bailout. We just lost $10 billion over that situation, and GM's going to China. I mean, you know, people hear this stuff, and I think a lot of people get mad. They do something. A lot of people get mad, and they go back to American Idol, and they throw up their hands and go, I don't want to be involved. That's what these politicians want. There is an actual strategy in what's called suppressing the vote. And I saw it in the primary. You and I talked about it with Romney. If you can suppress the vote and you can negativize the whole situation, then you can win because you just spend more money. You know, you just push harder and spend more money, and you win. That's not winning, and that's not winning for the American people. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think you're valid on all those points. The thing that's amazing to me is, look, whether George Bush meant it when he sounded like Reagan or Ron Paul in foreign policy before he got in office or not, is not the point. The point is when he got there, he did exactly the opposite of what he said he was going to do. He did the nation building. He did the spreading democracy at the end of the gun. It was a Woodrow Wilson League of Nations foreign policy by a guy who sold himself as a non-interventionist who was only going to deploy American troops if there was a legitimate American interest. And Obama said he was going to fix all the problems that George Bush created and restore our stature in the world. We've never been perceived as weaker. Vladimir Putin is outmaneuvering him diplomatically all the time. The Chinese are willing to test our military resolve and we cave. He backed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and those people then had to overthrow the Obama-backed coup. So the fact is that the Democrats are going to screw things up because they always have and they always will. The only Republicans that haven't screwed things up are the ones that are genuinely conservative. George Bush into power, not as the heir of his dad, read my lips, no new taxes, but as the heir of Reagan. And what did he deliver you? A neocon foreign policy. And then came the Hopi Changi Nobel Peace Prize winner. You know, what did he bring you? A neocon foreign policy. And remember, neocons are not at all conservative. That's just a name that they use. They're the new conservatives. Where did they come from? They're leftists. They're leftists who left the Democratic Party in order to infiltrate the Republican Party so that there's no difference in foreign policy no matter who you elect. But you can change that. You have to be a force multiplier to get real people elected, not just as commander-in-chief, okay? Because remember, Obama was about to go unilaterally and blow the crap out of Syria, but then this little thing called the Constitution got in the way, and the American people rose up from all across political spectrums and said, we don't want this war, and Congress was not going to give him the authorization. Now, the Senate, despite Rand Paul's strong stand against it, authorized it. But the House wasn't going to, and that's why it didn't happen. Now, they're going to try it again. That's what this whole Iran deal is about, okay? And you have to stop them again. But the only way that that's going to happen is if you start working your ass off right now to get more people involved, get more people to listen to this show, get more people to make phone calls, to help conservatives, to defeat rhinos, to protect the conservatives that are there like Justin Amash. You don't have to be from Michigan to help Justin Amash. You can send him a couple of bucks. You can make some phone calls for him. You can have you can call your friends in Michigan and say, hey, listen, please support Justin Amash instead of the rhino that's trying to primary him because he's a good voice against spying for the NSA. He tells me what his votes are like. He tells me why he's voting the way he's voting. If you want more of that, then you've got to help these guys. Now, you don't have to like everything about him. Maybe Justin Amash is a little bit too libertarian for you. Well, that's okay. He's one voice, but he's a strong voice. And on civil liberties, libertarians and conservatives are in agreement. We might disagree about pot smoking and gay marriage. Those issues are like number 158 and 159 on the list of things that we got to address. Foreign policy is a big one. Economics is another one. Now, if you want somebody who knows something about foreign policy, listen to a sober, intelligent, conservative Republican who's in office right now. So don't worry about him running or not running in 2016. He's already in office. But listen to how a real conservative policy is articulated. This is actually a long clip. It's 7 minutes. When we come back, we'll only have 5 minutes of live air left. We'll probably go about 30 minutes in overtime. If you want to listen live, call in 646-649-1013. Here's the junior senator from Kentucky.
Foreign policy. The second inaugural address of President George W. Bush, quote, "The survival of liberty in our land increasingly depends on the success of liberty in other lands," close quote. To be safe at home, we need to promote liberty abroad. Do you buy that?
Yes, to a certain extent. I think it depends on how you want to promote liberty. And, we have some people who think supporting the Syrian rebels right now is a way to promote liberty. I think it's much more murky than that. We need to have a healthier debate to determine when we get involved and when we don't get involved. You know, you could argue that the Arab Spring has brought more liberty to the Middle East, but you could also argue that democracy, they have chosen people who are much more antagonistic towards our country, and that if anything, the governments that ultimately settle in Egypt, in Libya, and maybe in Syria, depending on what happens, may or may not be more friendly towards America, and there's a very good chance we'll be less friendly. So you have to be careful what you wish for.
Okay, I'm going to try to continue to draw you out here. You gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation on foreign policy this past February. Quote, "Ronald Reagan did not shy from labeling the Soviet Union an evil empire, but he also sat down with Gorbachev and negotiated reductions in nuclear weapons." True. Of course, Reagan sat down with Mikhail Gorbachev after the biggest military buildup in our history, a 600-ship Navy, arming freedom fighters in Central America and Afghanistan, and initiating the Strategic Defense Initiative. So Reagan uses rhetoric and he uses diplomacy, but boy, did he also use power, right?
Yes, but I would say if you look at him with regard to involvement, I would say that he in some ways was more restrained than presidents before or after him as far as direct military involvement. When we were in Lebanon and had the tragedy with the Marines there, he actually made the decision to come home because he said it was too murky and they couldn't figure out and it wasn't a safe way to have him in there. It gets, goes forward to like Benghazi now. Was it safe to have an embassy there? Was it safe to have an embassy under State Department control? Was it safe to stay there when all your military support was saying we need more security and it was denied? So I think that Reagan really exemplified peace through strength, but I think some of the neoconservatives up here interpret that as war through strength, that war is always the option, that we always have to be involved. But consequently, they get caught up in a lot of contradictions. So, for example, many of the people who wanted to arm the Libyan rebels also wanted to arm Gaddafi the year before. Now many of them want to arm the Syrian rebels who are allied with Al-Qaeda against Assad, who is also allied with the Christians. So it's really a murky situation you have in Syria, and I'm not sure it's a good idea.
So your heroes as chief executives would be Ronald Reagan, who uses a great deal of force but rhetoric and diplomacy and is very careful about actually using force, or maybe Dwight Eisenhower, who ends the war in Korea 6 weeks into his presidency, and then throughout the rest of his presidency, there's only one direct engagement in Lebanon.
I think Eisenhower's been underappreciated.
Yeah,
you know,
I do too,
and
actually.
One of his quotes that I love is that he says, "I hate war like only a soldier who's lived it can."
Right.
The stupidity, the banality, the futility.
So, Iraq, was it a mistake to go in the first place?
Yes.
It was in the first place. Okay.
Not with Afghanistan. I was supportive of going into Afghanistan, but even Afghanistan now, the mission's been lost, and we've gotten bin Laden, we've disrupted the Taliban, and after 10 years, if we haven't trained the Afghan army, we're not going to. But I would say there's a good analogy in Afghanistan as to why Syria is such a mistake. After 10 years of being in Afghanistan, it's a fairly stable, it's like we can pick people to be in the military on the Afghan side and we train them. We still can't figure out friend from foe. Many people join the Afghan army and they just lie. They say, oh yes, we were supportive of Americans. And when the American soldier turns, they shoot him in the back. That's happened 100 times. Imagine how much more difficult it's going to be in Syria when you're handing out Stinger missiles and man pads and all of the sophisticated weapons to decide who's friend and who's foe.
Okay, so let me ask about Pakistan, say. We've got the drone program going on. They're killing bad guys. There's collateral damage, horrible phrase for meaning deaths to civilians. Right. That requires, as I understand it, that requires a presence on the ground to develop our own intelligence separate from what the Pakistanis tell us. And the notion would be that that's pretty directly related to the defense of this republic. We're not trying to engage in nation building in Pakistan. So you'd support the drone program?
I think that within and throughout the world, on-the-ground intelligence is something that we do have to spend money on and that we do need to be concerned with, and that means Arabic speakers in our military as well as our State Department and people living in those countries and knowing about it. Pakistan is probably one of the most worrisome places in the world. There's a significant amount of hatred for America there, but I don't see giving $2 billion a year directly to the Pakistan government. They're imprisoning really the best informant we ever had, maybe, or one of the betters, Shaquille Afridi, who helped us get information on bin Laden. We're not going to get much more information from informants if we don't protect our informants, and I think it's been a mistake that we continue to give money to Pakistan despite them imprisoning him for the rest of his life. With regard to the drone program, there's definitely a usefulness for drones within combat and within the military. Anything that can save our soldiers' lives, I'm for. Killing non-combatants, American citizens, I think they should be tried for treason. It's a very rare occurrence. We've only targeted one, and I think he should have just been tried for treason. Then maybe you target him, but really there should have been a court. I don't like a politician deciding guilt of an American. You know, next time you're in France, I don't like them just deciding to, waylay you with a drone as opposed to having some kind of court decide that you're a traitor. With regard to foreigners, I think there is a time, bin Laden, I think, deserved what he got, and he should have, whether it was with a drone or with individual soldiers. And so there are some leaders of these terrorists that I think should be killed. But once you've knocked off the top leadership, and then you knock off the next leadership, and the next leadership, is there ever an end? And is there a point in time at which it becomes sort of a recruiting tool and a negative thing for America? And I think there is a point in time. There's also a point in time when you antagonize the host country to a degree that they're no longer interested in, and I think that's where we are with Pakistan. The war's gone on too long. People are ready for that war to be over, and so am I. It doesn't mean that we withdraw from the world, but it does mean that the time has come for the war to end in Afghanistan.
Two last questions on the...
Not too bad for an ophthalmologist from Kentucky, right? All right, folks, we've got less than 5 minutes of live air left. We're probably going to go about 30 minutes more. If you want to listen live, call in 646-649-1013. Block Talk Radio is going to cut you off if you're listening in your browser or mobile device. If you're listening in podcast, just keep rolling. What I found interesting there is that Rand sounded sober and prudent. He sounded a lot more like Ronald Reagan or even George W. Bush before he became warmonger-in-chief. Yet Rand is called an extremist libertarian. Yet Ronald Reagan is Mr. Conservative, and George Bush was elected because he was so conservative, right? But Rand is the extremist libertarian. Why do you think that they're doing that? They're doing it so that rank-and-file Republican voters will be afraid to support Rand Paul, whether he does or doesn't run in 2016. I'm talking about supporting him now as the junior senator from Kentucky. They want you to be afraid of people like Rand Paul because they're extremist libertarians. Did that sound like extreme libertarianism or some kind of wacky foreign policy to you, Chris?
No, I found myself nodding my head in agreement. I was a teenager in the Vietnam War, and it ended about the time I was old enough to go. And kind of glad I didn't go to Vietnam, but, and I honor to all those people who did go. But you know, I am a full supporter of our military and our military troops and all those great patriots of our country. But at the same time, I think one of the frustrations that most people, including our troops, and it's interesting to look back in the primary with Dr. Paul, he had the largest percentage of military following of any guy in the primary. Why? Because people who had been there, including people like my son, knew we were chasing some folly. And they all signed up and volunteered. There was no draft. And it was an incredible patriotic move. But when they got back, they're like, what the hell were we doing there? And, you know, it's just like in Iraq. A lot of people don't understand this, but here we went in and blew the crap out of that country, you know, and of course, everybody knows about the WND, you know, issue. But as we were putting the country together, so to speak, organizing it and occupying it, they never secured the damn border, northern border. So the terrorists, you know, just came right over the damn border and gave us hell for 10 years until we finally pulled totally out. There are just so many insane things, and I think that with the Internet and the way people look at our entanglements around the world, and I think the Internet has a lot to do with it, but I think a lot of people are just going, what the hell are we doing? What is this nation-building thing? 10 years later and trillions of dollars, I can't pay my bills, and you're telling me that, you know, my insurance just got canceled, and why are we over there? That's really what's happening in people's minds. Maybe not everybody's got it figured out, you know, for themselves about how they feel about this stuff, but I think on a general basis, just like with Syria, if that was any example, I mean, the whole country lifted up on that one. 80-some% said no. The hell are you doing interfering in another country's problems? It has nothing to do with our national security, our corporate interests, or anything else. Leave them alone. Let them figure it out. And don't fund the damn rebels because they're Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra and they like to eat hearts. And what are we doing? So, you know, I think that this whole foreign policy issue in Afghanistan is a mess. I mean, what Rand said, you know, you build up a force, and then a soldier turns his back and he dies. And this has happened over 100 times. And it's the same thing in Iraq. I, you know, heard stories. I'm not going to say who I heard them from, but I heard stories where they were trying to train up the Iraqi guard. You'd put a guy on a bridge, and you'd go on patrol, you'd come back, the bridge would be blown up, but the guy would still be guarding the bridge. You couldn't trust anybody. You know, the alliances, and maybe they had his family. I mean, it is insane. We're trying to apply our Judeo-Christian Western precepts into a world that has been at war with itself for 1,400 years. You know, I mean, most people don't know what the difference between a Sunni and a Shia. And you know, Iran and what the stuff I'm hearing in the news about Iran, it's like, okay, why is Iran in the news all of a sudden? And do you even understand the difference between, you know, the Arab-Sunni caliphate mentality and Al-Qaeda and all those connections versus Iran, the Shia, the Hezbollah? Most people don't even have a clue. They just go, oh, that's a bad guy this week. Yeah, go get him. Oh, yeah, you know. And people need to learn some stuff because this foreign policy has destroyed our country. It's destroyed our economy. It's split our country down the middle.
Chris, do we really need to know the difference between a Sunni and a Shia and a Persian and an Arab? And I mean, do we really need to know that stuff? I don't think so. I mean, that's their problem. Let them figure it out.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, look, I'm interested in that stuff. You're interested in that stuff. But if you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, aren't interested in it, that's fine. You don't have to be interested in it. But the problem is that the neocons in the Democrat Party and the Republican Party are getting you involved in this stuff. You know, we almost took out a secular Arab regime. Granted, you know, Saddam was a thug. But we took that out because the Saudis were afraid of him to their northern border. Well, if the Saudis are so afraid of him, let them go kick his ass. Why do we have to do it? Now we want to take out the last secular Arab regime that has some stability and has actually been more effective at fighting Al-Qaeda terrorists than we have. because we want to help the Saudis and the Israelis build pipelines through there to Turkey. That's what you need to care about. The fact that we don't have any American interests over there. There's only interest for the moneyed elite, the corporatists, and the Federal Reserve. It's not our interest. And yet what happens? The Republicans are now apparently the party of war. Well, you look back historically, Chris, was the Republican Party the party that started the wars? Was it? Because, I mean, let's think about it. Woodrow Wilson, right? Not a Republican.
World War I.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, not a Republican.
World
Harry
War
Truman,
II.
Not a Republican. JFK, not a Republican. Lyndon Johnson, not a Republican. Right?
Vietnam.
So, all of a sudden, here comes, read my lips, Mr. New World Order, 1,000 points of light, and suddenly we have to send a half a million troops into the Iraqi desert to liberate the Kuwaiti emirate? I mean, what do we care? Let Saddam have it. What do we care? That had nothing to do with us. Of course, you know, we kicked ass there at least. You went in there, half a million troops, you overwhelmed it, you kicked ass, you won, you came home. Oh, except you left some bases in Saudi Arabia, which tended to piss off the Muslims, and Al-Qaeda used it as a recruiting tool and then started attacking the hell out of us. And then now we're, you know, up to our eyeballs in the Middle East and in Afghanistan and Pakistan and soon to be Syria and Iran, running right up Putin's backyard. He's not going to take that too kindly, and the Chinese are in an economic currency war with us. How does that make sense? But you listen, George W. Bush, before he became warmonger-in-chief, didn't talk like that. Reagan didn't run a foreign policy like that. And yet Rand Paul, with what we just heard, is the psychotic, extremist, libertarian, isolationist. Does it really sound isolationist? Because let me say, I got to say, the biggest isolationist that I've seen, Chris, is the Nobel Peace Prize teleprompter reader-in-chief. Because what he's done has completely isolated us. People are pissed at us all over the world. No one wants to do business with us. Nobody wants us coming into their country. And terrorists are trying to kill us all over the world now. That's isolationism. If we actually went with the policy that George W. Bush, the, quote, conservative, said he was going to enforce, it is entirely possible we'd be engaged in more trade. We'd be better off economically. We wouldn't have pissed away all this money on these unnecessary wars. And our young men and women wouldn't be suffering the way they are. See, the interesting thing about modern warfare is because of our technological advancements, not that many of our soldiers get killed. I mean, how many we lose in Iraq? Like 5,000?
Small numbers.
55,000 in Nam, right? But how many of our young men and women have come home, not just with PTSD, but with limbs missing, with psychological damage, with pain, with diseases that they would otherwise not have? That's who you've put at risk to fight for your freedom? I'm sorry, but that is a bunch of bullshit. They are not fighting for your freedom. Yeah, that's why they signed up. That's why they're patriots. That's why they are awesome. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they're over there fighting. They are fighting over there to further the Federal Reserve and patriot is? That's bullshit. A patriot is one who supports his military when they are actually defending you, which means that our fine young men and women in the military are not going over to shoot some guy across the sea. What they are doing is standing up to defend the people behind them, their families, and those of us here at home. That only happens when you have a Congress that reins in the imperial president and a president who's sober-minded enough to only go to war when America's interest is really threatened, and not to help some corporations spend billions of dollars in a boondoggle to rebuild a nation that was a sandpit before we got there, and it's still a sandpit. That's what happens. That's conservatism. So don't give me this crap that being a conservative means you got to be a neocon war hawk.
Really, the neocon term came from Democrats, you know? And so now we've adopted this system of perpetual war. I mean, it's too bad we don't have it, or we probably don't have the time to play it anyway, but to listen to Eisenhower, I mean, this guy was involved in war. And you heard what Rand was talking about, that Eisenhower was very prudent after that in only a way that somebody who had lived and breathed that hell, you know, could be.
And his final speech when he left office was, the number one thing you have to be concerned with as a country is this huge industrial war complex that we built up to fight this massive world war. And he said we have to be careful that it does not become essentially our economy and our government, you know, controlling the direction that our government goes. And since the Second World War, we have been in some conflict everywhere around the world. And here's something that a lot of people don't understand. We right now have some kind of military force in some kind of combat situation in over 100 countries around the world right now. And we haven't even cleaned up the mess from the last two big ones, Afghanistan and Iraq. And, you know, Pakistan is so destabilized now that that's going to be a huge issue soon. Africa, North Africa, is destabilized. And so we're all over Africa. Nobody even knows about this stuff. We used to actually have media that would actually, do investigative reporting and deliver information to people so people could make decisions for themselves. Now we have media that blocks out information and then only delivers you the crisis that they want you to focus on that week so that it ties to some kind of political motivation. That's really what America's become. And we talk about, you know, we used to, growing up in the Cold War, we used to talk about state-controlled media and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm standing here today going, this is exactly what we got in this country. The only difference is you think you're free, you know, as a citizen. I mean, how free do you feel right now? Do you know what your economic situation is going to be next year? Do you know what your house is going to be worth? Do you know if you're going to have your job? Or are we going to have 11 million new amnesty people that are going to be competed against your job that you may be barely holding on to or has been turned to a part-time job? I mean, this is serious stuff. Everything that's going on, fortunately or unfortunately, is serious stuff. And it didn't all start with Obama. Yeah, he's accelerated a lot of stuff, and it's bad. Question is will people turn it around by supporting the right kind of people in Congress? Unfortunately, the federal government is a leviathan. It's monstrous. It's bigger and more intrusive than it was ever designed to be by our founding fathers, for a reason, because they had a whole history of the world of totalitarianism to play off of, with a few very clear examples of republics and democracies that worked, why they failed, or why they succeeded. And they built the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which was so key. That Bill of Rights was everything. And that's what the left has been attacking for the last 100 years, and that's that Bill of Rights, because mm-hmm. you've got to take away those God-given rights if you're going to control people. Because when you look at, like, that situation in the UK with the Guardian newspaper and the Snowden leaks, you know, they don't have the same Bill of Rights we do. And that newspaper
company,
even though, even though they didn't expose anything that would hurt a spy or a troop on the ground or whatever, they were very careful about what they exposed. They're going after that paper, as a terrorist environment now.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you got to remember, people just don't understand how close, and maybe it's because of my age, I don't know, but they don't understand how close tyrannical, overpowering governments, how close they are, how close that is to what we are as a nation. And, Europe's in turmoil. You know, socialism does not work. The only reason it works for a while is because you either have a very prosperous economy to steal money from people making money so that you can pay for your programs, one, or two, you control the printing presses. Well, if your economy goes to crap and the only thing that's holding together your socialistic programs is the printing presses and debt, pretty soon that implodes on itself. And we've never taken it to this degree before, and I know not to get off foreign policy, but it's an important thing to understand because foreign policy is tied to economics, and wars are tied to economics. Very seldom do we actually fight a war for moral reasons. There's a bad guy, you know, killing people and murdering people. I mean, we let crap like that go all the time because it's not in our interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in
well,
Africa,
in the last,
I mean,
in the last
cases.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, but Chris, you're right. In the last three centuries, all the wars that have been fought have essentially been bankers' wars. And they fund all sides, and they make a lot of money.
And you're talking
the only
about
way that,
the French Revolution, right?
Especially that one. And the Communist Revolution and World War One and World War Two and all that stuff. It's all tied in together, and they're making money off all of it, and our young men and women are the ones dying. Now, the thing that's unique, and you touched on it with when you talked about our founding fathers, is they devised a system where the power to declare war is in the legislature, and the president can only act unilaterally when we're actually directly threatened. Okay,
right.
And they did that for a reason, because wars are expensive in both blood and treasure, and wars abroad always engender tyranny at home. The founding fathers knew that. Now, these are guys who laid down their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor to fight an 8-year war against the most powerful military the world had ever seen at the time.
Yep.
They knew what war was. So it wasn't some kind of theoretical abstract concept like some 20-year-old kid in his parents' basement of, you know, read Murray Rothbard or Ludwig von Mises and is all of a sudden a friggin' expert on foreign policy.
It was in their streets and their neighborhoods and their farms.
Yeah. So, you know, and you're absolutely right about it. It's always tied in with economics. And here's the thing. If Rand Paul is an extremist, isolationist, which is the kind of things that Peter King called him and Chris Christie said that his kind of libertarianism is dangerous, then tell me why Rand Paul sounds like Ronald Reagan, who every Republican loves, and George W. Bush before he became warmonger-in-chief. Rand Paul's not the extremist. The neocons are the extremists, and they levy that against you to get rank-and-file Republicans to be scared of these things. These are conservative principles, and Rand Paul, who's an ophthalmologist by training, knows the budget and knows how to do foreign policy. Now, we're running out of time because we're in overtime already, but here's 2.5 minutes, Chris, with Rand, I think it's in the same interview we just played, talking about the budget. And that's pretty pressing right now because apparently Rand is some kind of libertarian extremist. And Paul Ryan is Mr. Conservative. Well, Paul Ryan just handed the Democrats everything they friggin' wanted in this budget deal. That's conservatism to you people? If that's what you want more of, then sit back on your asses, let Karl Rove pick all your candidates, and then just show up and pull the ticket for the R's on voting day. But if you want this country to be constitutional, to have a restrained government under the law, where everybody is equal under the law, that's what Rand Paul's amendment proposal is about, forcing Congress to obey the same laws that they force upon the rest of us. It sucks that he has to put an amendment together to make that happen. It should just be a given, but that's not what's going on. Does that sound like an extreme position to you, that Congress should be subject to the same laws that we are? This is Rand Paul on the budget.
In March, you introduced a budget that would have eliminated the federal deficit in 5 years. You voted against the budget the House sent over that Paul Ryan put together, because although even as you were voting against Paul Ryan's budget, the press was attacking it as too dramatic, too
isn't
draconian.
That amazing, yeah.
Right, but that would have reduced the federal deficit over 10 years, and Rand Paul said not fast enough.
Well, I think we're dragging a lot of the party in the right direction. Ryan's first budget was going to balance in 28 years. Now he's come up to 10 years. You know, there were a little bit of unrealistic things. They were going to get rid of Obamacare spending, but he left in the Obamacare taxes. So we really think that we need a change. And I'm for a much more dramatic change than some of the gradualists in our party. I think we ought to just have a flat income tax, 17% personal, 17% corporate, very few deductions. You'd have a lot less revenue. This would not be revenue neutral, but I think you'd see an explosion in the economy as you left all of that money into the economy.
Senator, here's the first instance of a question that comes up again and again and again, listening to you, reading your speeches. What makes him think he's different? And here's the version, the instance right now. Republicans have been pushing for a flat tax since at least 1996 when Steve Forbes ran for president.
But he didn't win. If he would have won, we'd have had it by now.
So
we need to win.
So that's the point. What makes you think you're different? What makes you? Do you see I'll put it crudely, because this is a question that's in the air about you. Is Rand Paul just trying to make a point?
Right.
And so be it. Let him make a point. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a valid point. Or does he see a political opportunity? Can he actually get things done?
Right. See, I don't think anybody can sit here and say, oh, I am different. I'm going to be the one. I'm the one. That's a little bit presumptuous. However, I would say that there is a route to victory for Republicans nationally without diluting our message, being for something passionately. But I think it takes a twist that's slightly different. You're from out in California. California, we say bluish. It's a blue state.
It sure is.
To bring it back red, you're going to have to attract people different than the standard cookie-cutter Republicans been. So I am offering something different. And the libertarian twist to that, I think, has appealed to both ethnic minorities as well as the youth, as well as independents. It's really a message that gets beyond our hardcore Republican. But it's not antithetical to what hardcore Republicans stand for. But it is enough of a twist that I think it has a chance to resonate in areas where we have not done very well.
A balanced budget in 5 years, while Paul Ryan proposes one that maybe balances in 28 years. I mean, that's just insane. And now, of course, Paul Ryan, Mr. Conservative, who's, you know, so good that he was on the bottom of the super awesome, severely conservative Romney Ryan ticket in 2012, has just made a deal, a bipartisan compromise deal with the Senate, and now everything's going to be hunky-dory again. Come on, are you people buying this stuff? And, of course, Rand is now an economic extremist, you know. He really wants to cut stuff. He wants to take out the EPA. It's all so extreme. There's nothing extreme about this. He calls it a libertarian twist because people have forgotten what conservative means. People think conservative is Republican. Republican is just a party. And it's full of neocons and rhinos. But there are people like Rand Paul in there, you know, and that's what this show is about. Now, sometimes I, especially me, but, you know, Trog has a big club, but I get a little, you know, heated under the collar and colorful metaphors fly out of my mouth because this is important. Rand Paul wants to have a foreign policy that spares the lives of your children and only puts them in harm's way when you are directly threatened. Oh, but the terrorists are trying to kill us. Of course they're trying to kill us. Terrorists, I mean, Islamic jihadist terrorists have been trying to kill us for 14 centuries. That's nothing new. But do you know that you have 100 times greater likelihood of being killed by a policeman in your own country than you do by a terrorist? You're more likely to get struck by lightning than killed by a terrorist. Now, that doesn't mean you don't fight the terrorists. I think we absolutely should, and Rand does too. But you don't have to go invade the entire Middle East and topple all the governments and spend all our blood and treasure to do it. And you don't have to tippy-toe with Paul Ryan through the budget so that we can pretend to cut things. You know, they're going to bust the sequester cap. So basically now we're not even willing to reduce the increase in spending. We're going to increase the increase in spending. But Rand Paul is the extremist. You're the extremist because you believe in fiscal conservatism. Really? That's what extremist means? Because if that's what an extremist is, I'm a proud extremist. How about you, Chris? Apparently I shocked Chris into silence. Anyway, the point is that you need to really understand it looks like Chris has left the building. I'll wrap it up for you. We'll see if he can call back in. I don't know if he can in overtime. But in any event, the whole point here is that the words that they use, extremist, extreme libertarian, hard right, Tea Party legislative arsonists, these are terms that the left plays off, but they are really tools for the Republican establishment to ensure that their control of one of the wings of the duopoly at the national level remains, so that they can play rhetorical battles against the Democrats without actually furthering a conservative agenda, without actually restraining the federal government, without actually following the Constitution. And most people in this country who vote don't know that. Now, they have some kind of inkling that something is wrong. They definitely don't like Obama. But not liking Obama is not enough. Okay? And having an inkling that something is wrong is not enough. What they have to realize is that they have to be involved and they have to be active. And because you're hearing my voice, you have to get them to do it. You have to get them to not be afraid of being labeled an extremist, a teabagger, a hard right winger, because that's what they're going to be called. And the rhinos are so afraid of those labels that they won't even do anything remotely close to being called that. They want to be called bipartisan moderate compromisers, which basically means that they're Democrats in the Republican Party. Now, look at what happened with Obamacare. They wanted it to go through, one, because it was originally Romneycare, and two, because it gives them something to run against. Now, the fact that 10 million people are going to lose their insurance coverage, that just plays into the Republicans' hands, because the more people that are in pain, the more people that are likely to vote for any Republican just because they're not a Democrat. That's what they're counting on. But then someone like Ted Cruz, another extremist, said, I want to stop this thing before this bad stuff happens. And he was even asked the question, don't you think it would be better if you let this thing fail on its own and then show people that you were right and then win elections that way? And he said, no, because people are going to get hurt, and my constituents hired me to protect them. That's where we are. These words, extremist, are being used against you, and the word moderate is being touted as a good thing. Well, what is a moderate? That's somebody who's willing to play both sides of the fence, someone who's willing to go along and get along. Is that the kind of politician that you want? Well, we've been getting those. Has that worked out for you? Has that been successful? Has that restrained the federal government? Has that reduced the ridiculous spending, the massive debt, the endless wars? Or has it just made it worse? Don't be afraid to be called an extremist. Don't be afraid that they're going to use these words as weapons against you. But you stand up and you tell them, how am I an extremist if what I support is the rule of law according to the Constitution? Remember the whole Obamacare thing? They say, why are you trying to defund this thing? It's the law of the land. Well, it's just a statutory law, and Congress has the power to undo statutory laws. What Congress does not have the power to do is to circumvent the Constitution, and neither does the president. They're supposed to follow those laws. If you want the Constitution changed, there is an Article 5 amendment process. Congress can't just pass laws to change the Constitution, and the president cannot just ignore them. But that's what he's doing, and they're helping him. The Republicans are doing nothing to stop Obama. They're just speaking against the Obama-Reid agenda so that they can get you to vote for them out of fear. What you need to do is sift through that and support the real conservatives. Make it a happy environment for them in the House instead of just being the minority of the minority. Make them the majority. Real conservatives, real libertarians. And libertarians like Justin Amash are not libertarians like Gary Johnson. These are people who are principled about authentic Austrian economics, sound money, civil liberties. These are not left-wing ideas. These aren't crazy radical anarchist ideas. These are solid, traditional conservative ideas, and these are the champions fighting for this stuff. So instead of sitting back and waiting until 2 weeks before the elections to go door-knocking for your rhino or your Republican, why don't you get busy now and replace the rhinos with conservatives, and more importantly, get other people to do it. Don't let them use these words against you. This is the time for us to strike. When things are this bad is when there's a stark contrast between corporatism, fascism, socialism, Marxism, and authentic conservative constitutional principles. Take advantage of that stark contrast and get more people involved so that we can right this ship. It ain't going to happen in the next election cycle or the one after that. But if we don't start now, it's never going to happen, and we're going to lose this great nation, and the world is going to suffer. Now's the time to make it happen. We'll be back Sunday night, 10 p.m., bringing you another show, probably talking about the sequester and the budget deal that Paul Ryan just attempted to foist upon you. By then, the House would have probably voted, maybe even the Senate, and we'll see what that brings in. But in the meantime, don't let all this stuff freak you out, and don't be worried about the words that they're using. The simple fact is that elections do matter, but it takes more than showing up to vote at the polls to make it matter. If you're going to be an extremist, be extremely in favor of liberty. Be extremely in favor of the Constitution. Be extremely in favor of fiscal sanity. Be extremely in favor of sound money. be extremely in favor of federalism, be extremely in favor of that all are equal under the law. Now, in some ways, it's kind of hypocritical when we look at the Constitution, because that document was written by men who owned other men as slaves, and they actually legalized African slavery in the Constitution, in an immoral and disgusting institution. But what they wrote in the Declaration of Independence and how they framed the Constitution, it transcended their own prejudice, and they gave us an amendment process so that we can be deliberate and sober about making these changes, and we have changed it. It is no longer legal anywhere in this country to own another person. Unfortunately, because of our lax values in society and this chaotic government, we've got more slaves in this country than we've ever had. We've got sex slaves. We've got foreign slaves. It's absolutely horrible. But it's not legal, and it's not right. And that's what this country is about. We will wear our scars, and we will learn from them, and we will proceed forward for liberty. But if we are all going to be equal under the law, then you cannot favor Corporation A over Corporation B. You cannot favor this class of people because they belong to labor unions over this class of people because they work in small businesses. You cannot favor invading foreign countries to topple despots when the interests of your corporations are there, but leave other despots to rape and pillage their people. Now, you can't solve all the problems of the world, so unless we're attacked, we shouldn't be involved. So the idea is that if we're all going to be equal under the law, then that includes everyone, which is the President, the Senate, and the House, and the Supreme Court. Yet these people exempt themselves from the same laws they pass on you all the time, and you're called an extremist for thinking that that's wrong? How is that an extreme position? That's a perfectly rational and sober decision. So don't be afraid of these labels, and don't let them use these words to confuse you, and don't let them interchange Republican and conservative. Some Republicans are conservative. Most of them are rhino squishes. Replace the rhinos, further the cause of liberty by electing real conservatives, and we'll see you on Sunday. This is Rex and Trog signing off. Thunder of Liberty rolls on.
Let me turn to another subject, drones. Last March, you famously took to the Senate floor for 13 hours to filibuster a nomination because of your opposition to the military use of drones to attack U.S. citizens. This week, as I'm sure you know, Jeff Bezos, the head, we're looking at a picture of the drone right there, of Amazon, announced that they have plans, a hope, maybe 5 years down the road, that drones would come pick up a package, a book, a sweater, and deliver it to your front door where you could take it instead of a delivery truck. When you see that, and I'm sure you have seen those videos, does that excite you, or do you think to yourself, that's a problem, and I got to find a way to block it?
Well, you know, I'm not against technology, so I'm not one of these people who says, oh, unmanned airplanes is really a bad thing. There will be air traffic control issues. My problem is more with surveillance for privacy reasons, not with delivering of packages. So I'm worried about the government looking into our backyard. I'm also worried about private companies looking and counting and looking in our windows. And I have said previously, and this has nothing to do with Amazon, but that the rules on peeping Toms will have to be applied to higher technology. There has to be a certain extension of your privacy, not only your house, but your yard and the things that you do, that really people shouldn't be able to observe all of the time. And so there will have to be rules on private entities, but really most particularly I'm concerned about the government looking at our activities.
We also learned this week another revelation from Edward Snowden that the NSA collects records on cell phones, 4 billion cell phone records outside the country every day, and that they can also track where those cell phones are so they can track where people are. Big picture, how severely would you like to restrict the surveillance by the National Security Agency?
I would like to apply the Fourth Amendment to third-party records. I don't think you give up your privacy when someone else holds your records. So when I have a contract with a phone company, I think those are still my records. And you can look at them if you're from the government, if you ask a judge. But the most important thing is a warrant applies to one person. A warrant doesn't apply to everyone in America. So it's absolutely against the spirit and the letter of the Fourth Amendment to say that a judge can write one warrant and you can get every phone call in America. And that's what's happening. I think it's wrong. It goes against everything America stands for, and I will help to fight that all the way to the Supreme Court. And we need to get the Supreme Court to reexamine privacy, the Fourth Amendment, and our records.
So you would ban, if you could, all mass data mining, this kind of huge vacuum hoovering up of information?
I'm for going after terrorists with every tool we have. I'm not opposed to the NSA. I'm not opposed to spying. But I am in favor of the Fourth Amendment. So if we think someone's a terrorist, you call a judge, you get a warrant. If that person's called 100 people, you get 100 more warrants. If they've called 10,000 people, you got to get 10,000 individual warrants, and it's a pain, but it's a pain because we're trying to protect people's freedom. We're trying to protect the Bill of Rights. That's what we're fighting against terrorism to protect. So we can't give up the Bill of Rights in order to try to fight terrorism. You have to keep your privacy. You have to keep the Bill of Rights.